He's Dave Schwann, WGN News.
And he's Dean Diamond, WGN radio host.
Before the show, we have our pre-show meeting.
Yes.
We go through, a lot of people don't know, we go through a full rehearsal of the show.
Dress rehearsal.
All 4 hours in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's a dress rehearsal, full dress rehearsal. What you are hearing right now, the writers have been changing for days. There's not one word of the show that is spontaneous. Everything is meticulously scripted. But we were talking about that I was visiting a friend of mine in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, who I've known since I was 5 years old. And he found some old reel-to-reel tapes from our pretend radio station that we had back in the day, when my name, my fake radio name, was Dean Diamond.
It's awesome.
You should have kept it.
Because I shine.
You should have kept
it. Play the hits, man. Here's the Beatles. Dean Diamond shining with you, man. Sparkling. I don't know what I must have had some copies of these tapes, but I don't know what happened to him. But he did have them. So
you didn't include any of that in your first audition tape, did you?
No. No. And I hesitate. We're going to try to transfer them to see what we sounded like when we were 10 years old as little baby DJs, literally baby DJs.
Dean Diamond.
And I'm a little afraid of
what you're going to hear.
Yeah. What if I sounded better then than I do now? I think that's entirely possible.
I think it would be really interesting and fun that when you get this done,
for
when
you
have them transferred.
Interesting and fun for
interesting
you.
Interesting and fun
for
to
you.
Play these.
For you.
Yes, but I think for our listeners also, to play these on the show.
Why would that be interesting?
It shows...
Here's the Beatles! here's the... Mamas and
the papas.
Papas.
Papas, yes.
The papas. As the king once said, papa.
Our fake radio station was WCKD, the station for you and me.
Oh, I like that.
Because one guy's name was Charlie, one guy's name was Kevin, one guy's name was Dean.
Okay.
WCKD.
Beautiful.
The station for you and me, everybody. Dean Diamond shining. Maybe I'll go back to that.
You should.
Dean Diamond shining.
You should. Dean Diamond shining just for you.
Maybe
when
I'll
we do a National Disc Jockey Day, we'll do that that way.
Do you have any old tapes?
Yes, I do. I don't know where they are.
Oh,
right now.
How convenient.
Yeah.
I know where mine are.
Andy, this is what started it. Andy said that he found some tapes of him. How old were you doing play-by-play?
But you've got video.
So, yeah, this is a video of a Maine East basketball game against Evanston. I want to say it was 1985,
nice.
So I was probably 17,
nice.
18. Yeah, it's not good.
It's painfully embarrassing.
It's really bad. And then I did discover some of my old top 40 tapes from when I was in Peoria. That is hilarious.
All right. Well,
those are hilarious sounds.
If we can get these tapes transferred, I'll play the Dean Diamond.
I have segment.
If you're going to do it, I'll do it too.
I have a bunch of stuff
pretending
in college.
Like Schwani, who has saved everything that he's owned since 1961, suddenly, I can't find the tapes. Stone, everybody. This goes out to Mary Beth, who lives across the street. I used to do dedications for the girls that lived on my block.
Did you have a working transmitter?
Yes. Well, wasn't quite legal, but yes.
No, it wasn't. These days, you could do a low-power FM here and make it legal.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's start one.
Okay.
I got a full basement in my house. Funny with that.
That would be hilarious.
That would be great.
We started another pretend radio
that
station.
That would be great.
For senior citizens.
All I needed was my Mr. Microphone, and I could broadcast anywhere.
Yeah, but I'll come back and pick you up later.
Hey, good looking.
Man, oh, man. Well, the memories were flooding back right after the show last week. I hopped on a plane for the first time and went to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan because I didn't want to drive for 6 hours. It was a 45-minute flight. I don't know what took me so long.
Where did you fly into? Marquette?
I flew into Marquette.
Marquette? Yep. Okay.
Sawyer International Airport.
Yeah.
Which sounds way bigger than the airport really is.
International because they get Canadian flights.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Howard Sprague was the ticket agent. And Aunt B was working TSA, patting people down.
Stand over there.
It was very much a Mayberry-like experience. I hate to sound all like city boy snobby, but
what? Because they greeted you with a smile.
No, it's a small town, you know. Well, Sawyer is not that small, really. Marquette.
No, that's the biggest city in the UP.
It is. And then I rented a car. Goober was the car rental agent. And then I drove.
Did he tell you about the oil leak in the car? He
told me I got a pop. I got me a great pop while I was there.
An orange crush.
Now, this whole thing was based around a secret surprise party for my friend, Charlie, who I grew up with. I've literally known him since I was 5 years old. We grew up together. We went to school together. We did everything together. There were three of us, three musketeers. You guys probably had friends.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Right? Sure.
One of the three musketeers has now passed away, so there's the two of us. We haven't really seen each other in a long time. We talk all the time, but we haven't seen each other. So my friend, Charlie's son, calls me months ago and said we're going to have a surprise birthday party for Dad up here in the UP, which is where he lives now, because we used to go camping there when we were kids, camping and fishing when we were kids, and he liked it so much he actually moved there. So they're having this big surprise party, and he said nothing would surprise my dad more than if you showed up. That was true. He was pretty shocked. He was pretty shocked. You know, they had a big party for him in a restaurant. His family's there. You know, he's happy to see his whole family's there, and they stick me off to the side into a different room, and then I make my entrance because I'm dramatic like that. With the full orchestra, 60-piece orchestra, yep. And I make my entrance. And he was shocked. He was shocked. He was just staring at me, and there was no reaction at all. And then he got emotional, you know, and it was nice. And I said, "What was with the 10 seconds of no reaction?"
He just couldn't believe it.
He said, "At first I thought, wow, that guy looks just like Dean."
Wait a minute. It is Dean.
Wait a minute. Hold it. So we had a nice weekend, the whole 4th of July weekend, a nice small town 4th of July celebration in Gladstone, Michigan is where we stayed. I stayed at the Gladstone Motel. They're very, very glamorous. Very, very nice. Ellie was the hotel manager. She doesn't have the drugstore anymore. But very, very nostalgic, you know, reliving the old days.
Did the Darlings provide the musical entertainment?
That would have been the cherry on the Sunday.
Sunday.
It was very nice, and you just realize, you get into this big city pace in which you live your life. You literally could feel your blood pressure going down while you were up there.
Absolutely.
Everything is nice and slow and relaxed, and as you said before, everybody's polite and smiling and, friendly and, like that. And I, of course, I pushed them aside to get out of my way. I had things to do. But it was nice. It was nice. An old-fashioned small-town 4th of July.
The street and everybody's going, there's a stranger in town.
He's the bald guy. The bald stranger
in town. Here. He got off the bus a few minutes ago. Stranger in town.
Well, my bodyguards pushed them all out of the way before I ever No, it was nice. They have it's right on the water. Gladstone, of course, is right on the water, and they shot the fireworks off there on the 4th of July, and, you know, it was nice. It was just a really quaint, lovely, wonderful few days.
How long has your friend lived there now?
He's been there, I'll bet, 20...
Oh, is that right?
Over 20 years.
Wow.
Maybe 25 years, something. Yeah, he loved it up there. And let me tell you something. There's nothing to do up there.
Once you get outside Marquette,
he loves it, and people love it. You know, people. I could never do it, but there's you know, there's nothing to do. All you got to do is relax, I guess.
You think winters can be a little rough here? The snow they get there.
Yeah, exactly.
Hunker down.
Yes.
So I'm leaving. When I'm leaving, I'm coming home now. I turn on the GPS. I'm leaving. I have a 7 a.m. flight, so I have to leave super early from Gladstone, Michigan, to go back to Marquette.
Did Aunt B pack you a sack lunch?
She packed me a paper bag full of fried chicken.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
And a piece of the apple pie.
Careful. It might spill. See you at the airport. I'll pat you down.
Ta-ta!
My GPS is taking me down all these little windy roads, gravelly roads, and I thought the GPS is like conspiring. This is how my life's going to end, on one of these little gravelly, windy little roads. And, you know, it's pitch black. It's 4 o'clock in the morning, pitch black outside, and I thought, this is it. This is how it ends. But the GPS
was right. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Not a fan.
Well, how far were you from the airport, though, when you... Oh, you went to Gladstone and stayed there.
I went to Gladstone.
Yeah, okay.
Right, which is just right outside of Rapid River, Michigan, and Escanaba.
Escanaba, yep.
Escanaba's where the Walgreens is. In case you're over there and you need anything. Oh, yeah, the Walgreens has that. You can go get that at Walgreens.
Was Mr. Foley running the store, the grocery store?
Mr. Foley.
He's the man that runs the store in Mayberry. You don't know that?
You went in deeper than I ever remember. Was he the mean guy?
No.
That wanted to be in jail on Christmas?
That's Weaver. That's Ben Weaver. That's the department store guy. No, Mr. Foley runs the grocery store, the meat market.
Here we go. Here we go down the Andy Griffith rabbit hole.
You started it.
I blame myself.
You started it.
I do blame myself.
Yes.
I didn't know that you were going to B and C level cast members on the show. Some lovely restaurants. We went to some lovely restaurants. I don't remember the name. Unlike Schwani when he goes on vacation and
Mayor
brings back all the names of everything because everything has been comped for his whole trip. But it was very nice. It was very, very nice.
Oh, would you go back?
Sure.
For a visit?
Of course.
This time of year, it's fantastic
up
there.
Oh, it's gorgeous up there. Gorgeous. Here's a text that said, I grew up in Gladstone, Michigan. Isn't that nice? The 4th of July is the best.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, very nice. They had tons of food trucks, and, you know, people brought their lawn chairs out and blankets out in Gladstone Park, I think it was called. And then it's really nice fireworks display. It was very nice. And this text said, did you watch the log rolling in the park? I did not see any log rolling, but I heard about it. I don't know if it happened a day or two before or something, but when I heard about that, I thought that would be something fun for us to do.
That would be a new hobby for you.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Log rolling.
If we can somehow set that up at Tree Time for our big broadcast next year.
They've got plenty of room outside.
Yeah, the three of
That's
us.
That's true.
Log rolling. Paramedics are standing by. Pasties?
What?
What? There's a store that sells nothing but pasties? What?
You know, there was a radio station in a restaurant in Munising, Michigan, in the Northern Peninsula there. A real radio station.
Yeah.
That's where we should do the show.
Yeah. I had my
eye. You sound real interested.
I had my eye on WDCB in Escanaba. It's a little community radio station. 680 on your AM dial. I'd like to do
How can it have the same call letters as the one here in Glen Ellen?
Oh, well, no, wait. What did I say?
You said WDCB.
It might be DBC.
I got to look it up.
I can't remember. It's very similar, but it's a little community radio station, cute as can be. And they would run us out of town in 10 minutes if we did our show there.
If that.
Right. Get in the way of the show that sells used mattresses and household items. Anyway, so are we about to do the far-flung forecast?
We're not going to be too far at all. In fact, staying very, very, very local today.
Slow week, huh?
Well, no, there's a reason. No, there's a reason for this. We go right across the Illinois-Indiana line to Whiting, Indiana morning.
That's where I get my cigarettes and fireworks.
You're right along Calumet Avenue and Indianapolis Boulevard there. Yes, Whiting, Indiana. Goes back to 1871. It had a post office then.
It doesn't now?
Yes, it does.
Oh.
Well, Whiting was also incorporated in 1895. It is also home to what is now the largest oil refinery in the Midwest.
Oh, yes.
One of the largest anywhere in the country.
And may I see one of the most aromatic refineries growing up near that area.
You would know about it.
One of the most aromatic.
It was known, of course, for many years as the Standard Oil Refinery, now run by BP. But we mentioned Whiting, Indiana today because, Dean, as you were involved with a surprise birthday party for your friend, I was delighted to be involved for a surprise party for my friend and a loyal listener to this program, Norb Dudzik in Whiting, Indiana.
Have we met Norb?
Yes, he was on because we had him on with the Pierogi Fest a year or two ago.
I remember Norb.
80 years old today, and his wife, Carol, threw him a very nice surprise birthday party on Friday. It was great to be there and see old friends. So a very happy birthday to Norb, and best wishes to Carol and his family.
Oh, that's nice.
Whiting, Indiana, sunny and 69, right on the lakefront.
Andy, do you have any old friends you'd like to talk about today, since that's what we're doing on the show today?
I've got my buddy since kindergarten, Rob Saper, who may not be listening, and my buddy John Cucinato, who was also a first grade friend.
Very nice.
And yeah, they were at the wedding.
Okay.
They were the ones that talked. They're the little roast of me at the end.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. Okay. All right, very nice. Yeah. All right. So today's show, things that the listeners couldn't possibly know about. Things that are completely personal that don't make any sense whatsoever to the listeners. We'll have plenty of that. By the way, Shawnee, that station, the radio station in Escanaba?
Yes.
WDCB.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah. Just wanted to clarify the call letters.
WDCB, AM 680.
I'll have to find out the call letters of that station.
Yeah, find out some of their technical.
It was right by the bar. Fancy that.
Everything was right by the bar. That's not that unusual. This is the segment of the program where we talk with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital. Welcome back, Dr. Most. Wonderful to have you back on with us.
Dean, how are you?
Doing very well. All rested from the holiday weekend. You'd be very proud of me. I've been protecting my bald head in the all this sun. Hydrating and all the things that we're supposed to do in this kind of weather.
Good. And I'm sure Dr. Taglia did a great job last week while I was slacking and not working for you.
Dr. Taglia doing a wonderful job while you were sloughing off. It must be nice for you just to not give medical advice every single place that you go, right? Because once somebody finds out you're a doctor, you're in for it then, right?
Yeah, but usually once I ask them for their copay, they kind of calm down often.
Kevin walks around with one of those things so you can swipe credit cards no matter where he goes. The big medical news this week, it was the FDA's full approval of this new Alzheimer drug, which we talked about the week previous with the president of the Alzheimer's Association. But just bring us up to date with this. What is this new drug? What kind of potential does it have? People need to be talking to their physicians if they are diagnosed with Alzheimer's, right?
Absolutely. You know, we talk about blockbuster drugs. this one is going to be probably the tip of the iceberg, meaning that this is the first line of this drug that is really impacting a disease where in the past we really have not had anything for it. You know, and it's called Leqembi, and like you said, it got full FDA approval this week, midweek, which was, you know, just unbelievably great news. And what it is, it's a drug that we know, and going back even to when Dr. Alzheimer in 1906 noticed this illness, that there were these clumps of protein in the brain. And what this drug does is it removes those clumps. We never knew if this is going to be the cause of Alzheimer's or because of this Alzheimer's occurs, but it certainly looks like this is going to slow the progression of the illness in people early onset, which is just phenomenal news. And now it really is going to be getting to your doctor, talking about if you have concerns, getting tested to see if this drug would be appropriate for you.
Is this a medication which is taken in pill form, injected? How does one take this?
Yeah, so that's one of the problems with a lot of new drugs is that they're currently in the form where you have to have an infusion. So this is given to you through an IV, and it's every twice a month through the IV. Now, they're working on an oral dose of it, but they have to figure out how they can get it past the stomach acids to still be in the form that it's needed to work in the body, because the stomach acid will break this down. It's a monoclonal antibody drug, so if the stomach breaks it down in the oral form, then it's not worth working. So right now, currently, it is going to be in an infusion form, and hopefully you'll see an oral form of this in the somewhat future.
And I would guess that the cost of the drug is pretty astronomical right at the moment.
Yes, it is. You know, the cost of the drug is north of $26,000.
Wow.
But I think what's probably more important is the FDA about a month ago said, hey, if the drug for Alzheimer's gets full approval, in other words, it's gone through the process and it's been approved, not in a clinical trial, not, you know, something that's still experimental, that it will cover the cost. So that's really good news when you think about, you know, 6.5 million people have Alzheimer's right now. This is a drug for the earlier onset of Alzheimer's. So you probably have 1 million people in the United States right now that would qualify for this medication. So certainly the cost is going to hit, but we also have to look at the long game. If we slow this disease down, do we now have longer life, we have a productive life, more value, and less hospitalizations and less other medical costs? So they've done the math to figure out that this will be a good investment and the right thing to do for people.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've talked so many times about what a cruel disease this is, not only for the person who actually has the Alzheimer's, but for their family members, their loved ones, their caregivers. This is a tough one, and if there is anything that can slow it down, and probably will be covered by Medicare and your insurance, you need to talk to your doctor. You need to talk to your insurance about investigating taking this on, because it has been now fully approved. Those are the next steps, right? Talking to your doctor about it?
Absolutely. That's definitely the next step. And we all have to understand that this drug, let's compare this to penicillin, right? Our first antibiotic ever was penicillin, and we all got around it saying, look at what this can do against infections. Same thing with Alzheimer's. This is the first drug. They will only get better from here on, and there's about three or four more in the pipeline. And as they get better, you'll see lower side effects, hopefully easier way to take the medication, and a lower cost. I mean, look at antibiotics now. We have hundreds of antibiotics to choose from because of the advancement of finding one and then perfecting it as we move forward.
Yeah, somebody on the 847 area code is asking about the side effects of this Alzheimer's drug. Has there been any, notably? I mean, every drug has something, right?
Absolutely. There have been some fairly severe. Some individuals have brain swelling. Some had strokes. Some had bleeding in the brain. What they found is that there's usually this one subset that has this genetic condition where they're going to see the chance of side effects much higher. FDA hasn't done it yet, but we assume that they are going to say you must have genetic testing prior to getting the drug. Because if you fall in this one class, you have to understand that you have a much higher chance of having a bad side effect. Now, the vast majority of people are not going to have that. They're going to have fever, chills. They're going to have simple, I shouldn't say simple, but side effects that are very tolerable. However, there is this smaller subset that does have some bad side effects that we need to identify those individuals, make sure they understand the risk of that, and then use the drug appropriately in that group of patients.
Yeah. Bottom line, talk to your doctor to learn more and see how this may or may not be something that's helpful for you. I don't know why on our text line we haven't had any COVID-related questions in quite a long time, but we've got quite a few this morning from the 608 area code. Dr. Most, do you recommend taking the second bivalent booster now or wait until September to take the new vaccination for COVID for people over 65 years old?
Yeah, it's a question that has been asked over and over and over again. I'm glad that people at least have the thought process now of what should I do next.
Right.
So right now, my recommendation would be, you have to remember that the BA4, BA5, that's the bivalent booster that we have. Totally different than the original COVID vaccine. The BA4, BA5 was the bivalent booster. We got it once in the fall or early winter, and then we were silent on a second booster until just recently. Canada had done it. UK had done it. Across the world, they had done it. We were silent until the FDA said, oh, you know what? We should probably have that over the age of 65. Well, I talk about messaging. Well, then now what you do, you message right after that and say, oh, by the way, in the fall, we are going to have the vaccine for the XBB, which is the strain that we're seeing currently, which just added more confusion to people. My current recommendation at this point is to wait for the XBB and to take that one, which is the strain that we're seeing currently circulating here. Unless you have a high risk of having a bad infection, I would wait. If you say, hey, I'm immunocompromised, I have cancer, I'm getting chemotherapy, I'm diabetic, I have heart disease, okay, you can go ahead and get that. But the BA4, BA5 is not the ideal match strain right now. It is the XBB, which will be in the vaccine in the fall. Hopefully that didn't confuse people.
Yeah. 847 area code says, my husband is 70. I'm 69. We've both had COVID at the end of April, so we're about 90 days out of the end of COVID. We have several trips coming up at the end of July. We're both fully boosted, but we have appointments to get additional boosters today. Is that appropriate? We're both in reasonably good health and had no side effects from previous boosters.
No, I would say no. I mean, if you've been fully boosted, in other words, you've gotten two of your boosters and you just had an infection a couple months ago, you still have the natural immunity, I think you are covered until the fall. I would, unless there's some other underlying condition that I'm not aware of with what you're saying, but it sounds like you're fairly healthy, have had two boosters, which is what the recommendation is, and you've had an infection recently, you're very well covered.
All right, let's go to our phone line, which is 312-981-7200. That's for text or phone calls. 312-981-7200. And Ted, you're on the air with Dr. Kevin Most. Hello.
Yes, good morning, Dean and Dr. Kevin. Thanks for having me on this morning. Hey, my question to you, Dr. Kevin, is if you would, just rank in harmfulness to us as humans, alcohol, tobacco, and cannabis.
Oh.
Wow. Mm-mm. That's an interesting question. Okay.
It would have been a good question for before the 4th of July holiday weekend. But.
Yeah, I mean, if I was going to rank those, I would certainly rank alcohol number one. And when I say that, alcohol in moderation is okay, but alcohol in too much obviously is going to have impact on many illnesses as well as other health-related issues. So I would rank alcohol number one. Tobacco, I would rank number two. And again, tobacco, if people understand the risk of lung cancer based on how many years you've been smoking and how much you've been smoking, and you know that if you stop that smoking at an early age or at a good age, your lungs can reinvigorate and get back almost to normal. And then I would put marijuana third, mainly because we know that there's a lot of medicinal uses for marijuana, and used in the right format and in the controlled environment is fine. And we know, like I said, you have patients receiving chemotherapy right now that marijuana is the only reason that they can keep their nutritional status up. So that would be my ranking. But very interesting question, Ted. Thank you.
I wondered just about the ingestion of marijuana smoke into the lungs. You know, any foreign, kind of pollutant in the air being ingested into the lungs, if that had some effect. Because, honestly, I don't know if it's just the places that I go. I smell weed everywhere I go now. People are smoking marijuana everywhere now.
I wonder,
you know, is there no effect for marijuana like there is for tobacco, where you're getting secondary smoke?
Well, you have to remember that tobacco is treated with so many chemicals and so many carcinogens that really that's right. The biggest issue here.
Right.
So when we look at marijuana, if it's naturally grown, certainly it could irritate the lungs. We know it does. It causes coughing. Any kind of smoke would irritate it, but certainly not to the level of the carcinogens that are found in tobacco smoke. Mm. And unfortunately, in a lot of other air pollutants that we're exposed to every day.
I wondered also when you were talking about, you know, if you quit tobacco smoking at a reasonable age, you can reinvigorate your lungs as a result of that. For how long does that damage remain after you quit smoking?
Well, it really depends on how much you smoke and for how long. We go by pack years. So someone that hits the 30 pack years, so two packs a day for 15 years, 30 pack years. That's kind of a magic number there and a tipping point for the damage that you've done to your lungs really increases your chance of lung cancer. Now, there's two different things. You know, we can say I can smoke and I will have irritation in my lung. I'll have bronchitis. I can have early signs of COPD after a long time. COPD, where we have chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, that is not going to come back. You have damaged your lungs to a point where they are not going to work, and we need to give medication and other breathing treatments to make sure that we get the maximum capacity out of our lungs. However, the individual who has smoked for a couple of years only and more has done it socially, you stop smoking now, your lungs will be back to essentially normal, really, in a, I don't want to say a very short period of time, but certainly within a year.
Now, I was about a pack a day smoker 35 years ago. Am I fairly in the clear
that's
now?
That's why Dean's asking. Yeah,
it's exactly, you are, Dean. I mean, now, really, the damage that smoke has done, if it didn't get to a point of COPD damage, which it certainly hasn't with you, your lungs are probably back to the capacity that they would find in a normal, 60-plus-year-old individual.
Right. If Dr. Oz was here, he'd bring out some healthy-looking lungs so you could see what they look like instead of the gross black ones that he'd bring out. And you'd mentioned, too, if for drinking alcohol in moderation, it's okay. What would you say is moderation? People are going to be outside enjoying cool drinks all day today because it's going to be so nice. What Kevin, is a moderate amount of beverages to have, alcoholic beverages?
Yeah, when we look at individuals who drink a glass of wine or two glasses of wine a day, we know that there's a heart benefit for that just because of some of the chemicals that are actually in wine. We look at some of the other hard spirits, and there's not that much benefit at all. So certainly I would limit yourself to a drink, two drinks a day. Anybody who really is drinking, four or five drinks in a day probably needs to talk to their doctor, should have their liver tested, get some of the blood tests to see to make sure there's damage. And then also talk about, we have to understand, this is a disease that can be somewhat silent, but then also is very apparent. And we really have a lot of individuals with alcohol-related issues, and alcoholism is very high. So certainly something where your doctor asks you about it, be honest, tell them how many drinks you have, whether it's going to be, counseling you on how to drink better and safer, or if it's at a point where, you really do need some help.
And let me just follow up one more, Ted. Your question is a really good one. What about edibles? A lot of people are not smoking marijuana, but ingesting it in candy and brownies and, you know, baked goods. Any difference in health aspects with that?
Certainly. So you wouldn't have the irritation in the lungs. The one concern I have with edibles is the content. How much? Who made those brownies? How much marijuana is in there? And it's kind of in your system now. You know, where you're smoking, you can stop smoking. But once you've ingested it, it's in your system now, and you have to wait for it to run its course. So certainly I would be careful with edibles. But again, what's the individual taking it for? A medicinal reason or a pleasure reason? And that's probably the tipping point there.
Yeah, far out question, Ted. Thank you very much. It was a very interesting one. Related to that, the 847 on our text line, what's your take on chewing tobacco?
Oh, terrible. I mean, I hate to say it that way, but it is bad. If you look at the number of people who have oral cancers and throat cancers, people think that chewing tobacco is good. It's not getting in my lungs. It's not going to cause lung cancer. But when you put that tobacco up against a very vascular part of your body, the inside of your mouth is extremely vascular. For anybody who's ever cut the inside of their mouth, they know how much that bleeds. So certainly you are going to absorb the contents of the chewing tobacco. And we have seen more and more. Fortunately, it's been decreasing now because the popularity of it has obviously dropped quite a bit. But certainly we know that that is causing a lot of individuals a lot of problems, not only with their dental health, but also cancers of the mouth and tongue.
Yeah.
You can almost go back to chewing tobacco for a vast majority of it.
Yeah, not to mention it's so disgusting when people are chewing and spitting. Beth, you're on with Dr. Most on WGN. Hello.
Hello, good morning. Dr. Most, is the Alzheimer's drug useful only for newly diagnosed, or can it benefit people that have been afflicted for a while?
It's a great question, Beth, and the concern is going to come down to how advanced is the disease. So in other words, people could be diagnosed early and still have what they would call the early signs of it, and it hasn't advanced and hasn't progressed much. What they are going to do with this drug is obviously, if they said we're going to give it to every patient with Alzheimer's, we would swamp the system and they probably couldn't even make enough of the drug. So really what it's looking at right now is looking at it's going to be used for individuals who are early onset or minor symptoms. So the person with advanced is probably not going to get the benefit that they've seen with this drug. But those individuals who are early onset, just diagnosed, minor symptoms, it certainly would be the one that they would be focusing right now.
But still something with which Beth should check with a doctor, right?
Oh, 100%. 100%, because what you think may be advanced, the doctor may say, oh, no, that's minor still. Those, you know, the stages of Alzheimer's as far as where an individual falls, the FDA hasn't said exactly what stage they're going to cover up to, but certainly it's going to be in those early stages.
Good luck to you, Beth. Thank you for the call, Dr. Most. I hope you enjoy your beautiful Sunday today. And as always, thank you for all the great information. We appreciate it.
You got it, team. We'll talk soon.
Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital. Oh, my bald head in that sun yesterday. It started off so crummy yesterday morning, right? It was like all rainy.
Yeah, and then it cleared off. It had a beautiful afternoon.
And it turned out to be super sunny, and my bald head had no protection.
Well, wear a hat.
Well, it was raining.
All the more reason to wear a hat. I can see you in one of those big rain hats.
I can see you in one of those yellow raincoats that
I have one.
The kids wore in school. Galoshes? Did you wear galoshes also?
Yeah.
Andy, do you even know what galoshes are?
I've heard of them before, but never worn them.
I realize that that's a word that people like stare at me when I say certain words that.
Galoshes.
Only Schwani and I understand.
Your glasses are spectacles.
Hey, you know who I saw yesterday? Former producer Ryan.
Really?
Oh, you did?
Yeah. He just got married, like, what, a month ago or something?
Mm-hmm.
And if I may say, in one of the most beautiful ceremonies I've ever seen.
The officiant was very efficient.
Conducted.
Yes.
I officiated.
You behaved
Ryan's.
Very well.
I did.
Did a great job.
I was on super nice behavior that day. But I'm at the Roscoe Village Burger Fest yesterday. I was one of the judges. Let me tell you about eating 10 hamburgers, by the way.
The Joey Chestnut of the burger.
I never want to see another hamburger as long as I live.
I don't believe that.
But who walks up? Young Ryan and his lovely bride, Alexis.
Alexis.
Nice.
That's great.
Yeah. Said that he had a nice time.
And you said, who are you? Is that what you said?
They pretended
what?
Like I
what
didn't
do you
know. I had my bodyguards carry him off. I have no idea who that is. But, he was there enjoying the festival, and it was great. It was really fun. A lot of great music, a lot of great food, and I didn't eat 10 full hamburgers, but I had 2-3 bites of 10 hamburgers from the whole deal. And have you ever heard of this place called the Stop Along?
I have not
heard of it.
It's on North Milwaukee. They have a location on North Milwaukee and also North California. In Bridgeport, I think. But they won the competition. There was a blind testing. I was judging along with Alderman Scott Wagasback from the 32nd Ward and Samantha Esposito from this website called Chicago Burger Bible. And we all they had a blind test of the 10 burgers that were participating in the contest. And we chose the Stop Along as our favorite burger. So I'm going to have my stomach pumped so I can go back today.
Oh, you're going to see? I knew that wasn't going to last long.
No. I honestly could not eat another burger for the rest of my life, I don't think. I'm done with burgers. But it's a really fun fest. A lot of great food, a lot of great music. It's going on until 10 o'clock tonight. And we have a voice from the past here on our little Sunday show. Who will be joining us right when we come back from this break. So, Andy, you say you've been here 5 years now?
Well, it's whenever Sam decided to leave is when I took over. So when did you leave?
I think about 5 years ago.
Was it five?
Doing sports here on, all over WGN, on all the shows, was Sam Panionovich, who one of his assignments, he somehow got stuck doing sports on this show. And we had a few laughs through the years. Welcome back, my friend. It's so good to see you.
Good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
By the way, I remember we talked about this when I was here, and you said you could break the world record for watermelon consumption. It's 13 pounds in 15 minutes, and you said you could do it.
I think maybe not today because I'm still my body is still in trauma from the hamburger escapade.
13 pounds.
That's a lot of what does the average watermelon weigh?
I don't know.
It's got to be about 13 pounds, I would think. I could eat a watermelon.
You were very
adamant
that you could do it.
I'm pretty sure that I could eat a whole watermelon.
But that's the world record.
I think I could break the record.
Okay.
It's water. It's basically water.
13 pounds.
Did you bring a watermelon with you? Is
no,
this a challenge?
I didn't. No, I didn't. Well, you were talking about your burger thing. And
yeah, it does fit in. Welcome back. You live in Boston now.
I do.
And you're a big, fancy TV sports and wagering guy, right?
Your words, not mine. But yes, yeah, it's crazy. Like you, I'm on TV every day, which is crazy.
Put two Southside guys on TV. Who would have thought? Who would have thought?
No accent yet.
So what
either.
Do you do? What? It's not a conventional sports cast, is it?
No, it's a daily gambling show. So basically, we tell people, you know, where they should place their money. And it's every day at 5:30 Eastern, which is great. It's a half-hour show, and, you know, we talk about the whole gamut, you know, like baseball, basketball, hockey, football. Obviously, it's a dead period now because there's only baseball, but
right.
It's basically like an investment show, I would say. Like, you have X, and here's where you should put X. You know, it's a...
And you advise people on what to do, where to place their bets.
Yeah, we had a good hit this year. I had the Miami Heat to win the Eastern Conference in basketball, and they were like 10-1. And I know you're not a big gambler, but, you know, 10-1 is a pretty good pop.
Yeah.
And Miami won the first three games of the Eastern Conference Finals. the Celtics rattled off three straight wins. So it goes to game seven, and I'm like, and the Heat end up winning that, and that's, you know, that's a good pop. But, you know, you win some, lose some.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You are an engaged man now also, right?
A cat owner.
Yeah, a cat. The cat owner.
It's crazy.
Wow, a fiance and a cat.
Well, it's funny because when I used to work here, I was so targeted. I was so tunneled. Everything was sports. And I think Annie knows this. Like, when you're here, everything is sports.
Of course.
And I never, you used to talk about, you know, I'm on the grill, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And I was so tunneled. Everything was sports.
Yeah.
And I've actually grown up, you know, like I'm doing so many things now. But, you know, when I was here working on the weekends, and it's funny, people don't know this, you know, like Monday to Friday, I'm at the games from 3 to 10, 3 to 11 p.m. And then I'm here Saturday and Sunday. And it was just, everything was full throttle sports. And I've actually been able to take a step back from the sports, believe it or not.
You have to breathe a little bit.
I was typecast a little bit.
Well, you have to live a life. You know, people, you know, they do look at our jobs, and we do have cool jobs. It's great. But you do have to step back, and you, especially you, you're a young man, you have to enjoy a life.
There was no stepping back, though, when I was 27. Yeah. It was, Dave Ennett said, look, you are doing weekend mornings with Manfredini, Kathy and Judy, Rick Pearson, and Dean Richards. And talk about a cavalcade of people.
Yeah.
Like trying to play off the four different shows. Holy cow.
Quite a Ferris wheel of different personality.
Man.
But I think you had fun on this show. We always had a lot of fun on this show with you.
This, honestly, and I'm not just saying this, this was my favorite show because, you know, think about it. It's you and Schwani and 26-year-old me. And I'm trying to figure out how to belong, and I don't know where the hell to start.
Yeah. Sam, I'm 56, and I'm still trying to figure it out.
And, you know.
Are you 56, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Really?
I'm an ancient man.
I would have taken the under on 56.
We got to find somebody younger.
I appreciate that. Yeah, you probably do.
But I remember.
You know, there is someone older than that on this show.
We already said that you and I are the old ones on this show. We already said that.
But I am not the oldest.
You say that like it's a bad thing, Schwani. I'm the oldest. So what?
Okay.
What, do you want me to file a lawsuit against you? Ageism? Discriminating against me?
just saying. Just saying.
All right. As long as you jumped in here, Schwani. Sam, explain this to me. I know the reason that you left WGN was because of Schwani.
Yes.
That we've had so many people. I can't even tell you the number of producers, sports people who have been on the show. They last on the show for maybe, you know, 4, 5, 6 months. How long were you on? You were
2 years.
For quite a few years. Yeah. Somehow you made it for 2 years. But the Schwani that broke the camel's back, finally came along. What was the reason?
Well, I had to move to Vegas. I had to take a chance. But no, Schwani, you know, and Schwani used to jump into my sportscasts, and I sent you a clip. I know we probably don't have time for all this stuff,
no,
but
we
I did.
It's pretty funny.
When Schwani jumped into the John Fox story, you know, and again, your ability to jump into the newscast, I will say one thing, and I don't want to just, you know, kiss your behind the whole time.
Which,
but,
by the way, we're not allowed to do anymore.
You can't? Really? Yeah,
for that reason.
We've been instructed.
Since I left, you can't jump into the news?
We're not allowed to jump into the news.
But
anymore.
No, but he did the far-flung forecast at 9:30, and then I made it the wacky sportscast, which I would find, like, you know, somebody calling the NBA finals in Brazilian or Portuguese or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, it was a whole thing. And, you know, Schwani oftentimes, as you know, was the end of all means. You know, we would have a good thing going, and then Schwani would jump in and just throw water on whatever we were doing.
Welcome to my world.
The absolute straight man, Dave Schwan.
Do you have that clip, Jack? Do you have that? Well, play that little clip here.
Bulls back on the hardwood Tuesday night in Milwaukee, and Dean will bring this full circle and end with the Bears story. John Fox, for some reason this week, was asked about pets he's had. He had a pet monkey at one point in time.
Christmas gift was that year we'd gone down to my grandparents' They had a home down in Marathon Key in Florida. And so on the way back up from that, we happened to stop at a pet store. In those days, that was all legal, it was above board. I don't think they're selling too many of those things now. But, yeah, she was actually a great pet. And it was, as I look back at it, very unusual, for today's world.
You think?
Just a little.
How does this come up in a Bears practice?
You don't think there will be any monkey business on the game today,
oh,
will you?
Look what you just did.
Johnny.
What you just did.
That was dubbed in.
Little Johnny, Merry Christmas. We got you this a very special present.
The follow-up then was, what did the monkey eat? And the monkey's name was Gidget. Here's John Fox.
Wait a minute.
The monkey's name was Gidget. I'm not making this up.
Gidget the monkey.
Here is Gidget's
Merry Christmas
diet, according to John Fox.
Eats about anything. Gidget happened to like grapes, so without going through her whole diet, we're reaching pretty low here.
Yes, we are.
John, stop talking.
Your team is 4-10. Worry about that.
We can hear you. Stop talking.
That's your sports and your monkey update. I'm Sam Paniatovic.
Snow today, high near 25. Dean, the chance of precipitation is 100%.
Gidget, down!
Get off my leg! It's the best Christmas ever, Mom. Thanks.
It's all above board. Remember that. It's all above board.
It's all legal.
Mom, what's Gidget throwing at me?
And so on the way back up from that, we happened to stop at a pet store. In those days, that was all legal. It was above board.
Wow.
I would literally, and again, this show was different than any show on the station.
You think?
I would scatter the sports world to find stuff like that.
Yeah, goofy stories.
Well, because let's be real. You didn't care that Paul Konerko went 2-for-3. You didn't care.
True.
And I would rip through.
The audience did, but I would,
and they told me, Todd Manley at the time, hey, man, you got like 60 seconds. And I said, okay, I'm going to rip through. All right, Bulls won, Cubs lost, White Sox lost, Blackhawks won, and here's a clip.
Here's something funny.
And you, like I said, you didn't care that Paul Konerko went 2-for-3.
No.
But if I found a clip of John Fox having a pet monkey, I knew that you
right
were going to explode.
Yeah, that's right.
And that was what I looked for. I literally catered to you.
And Chwani, don't you think proof positive how immature and stupid the show has been for decades now?
Yes. That I will agree with. Yes.
I was on the trigger for that monkey too, man.
That's good. That was good. But the other thing that I used to love is that you would find these sports broadcasts from around the world. And we had no idea what these people were saying,
no.
But the enthusiasm with which they were saying it was always very entertaining. What is this clip that you sent me?
So this is from the NFL season last year, and I had this in my vault. I figured you would let me back at some point in time. Can I toss to the clip here? Can I do that?
Yes.
So this is the Carolina Panthers Spanish radio broadcast from 2022. This is a touchdown pass from Baker Mayfield to LaVisca Chenault, and you're going to love it.
Baker manda sus números, tiene tiempo, se deshace de la pelota, le entrega.
LaVisca.
LaVisca va a romper por fuera.
¡Vamos!
¿La viste?
¡Vamos!
A la 15, ¡vamos! A la 20, a la 10, a la 5. Métete LaVisca.
Hasta LaVisca.
Métete LaVisca.
Hasta LaVisca.
Hasta la vista. Touchdown. 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 La Vizca, hasta la vista. Contra, this is Serpentinas. Bailale, bailale, bailale.
Bailale, of course, is dance.
I love it.
Dance, dance, dance. But that was 8 touchdowns.
That's fantastic.
And no, you used to love because it would be an NBA Finals game, and it would be, blah, 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 Kevin Love. Blah, 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 blah.
Hasta la vista.
Oh, man. I mean, those were the ones, though. That's fantastic. And you love that, and I learned that about you, that, again, we could have fun. And,
absolutely.
You know, when you're joining a new show for the first time, it's like, all right, what does this cranky old man want to hear?
Well,
and it was, believe it or not, it was foreign sports highlights.
Yeah, he ain't kidding.
That was your thing.
That was pretty much it. That's the thing about the show. We're serious if we need to be serious, if there's something going on that we need to be serious about. But 99% of the time, that's not the case. So.
There was one, and I went back through all this audio, of course, you know, pulling those two clips.
I love that you have a vault.
There was one sportscast. I was reading my thing, and you hopped in and said, I hate to interrupt, but I just saw Batman drive by.
Oh, this is when we were on Michigan Avenue.
Do you remember this, Swanee?
Was it the Batmobile?
Yeah,
the
and Batmobile, then, of course, yeah. And you came back with that. And, you know, I mean, I'm, you know, like I said, I have, you know, 90 seconds every half hour, and you pop in and say, I hate to interrupt, but I just saw Batman drive by.
Turns out the management hated when I interrupted, too.
It was Lala weekend, too, and you go, oh, he's probably getting there early to go see Joey Badass. And I said, well, you know, you might be on to something here. But, yeah,
very nice.
Thank you for interrupting my 90 seconds to thank say that you. Batman just drove by the Allstate Showcase Studios.
So you're visiting family this week? Or
yeah. Well, you all know my dad. My dad just turned 77.
He was just on the show on Father's Day.
No, well, you told me to call, and I said, no, I can't. I'll cry. But, yeah, he just turned 77 on July 6th.
And, happy birthday.
Happy birthday to Sam.
So, yeah, we're going to go down today. My brother and I, my mom and dad, we're going to go, and he's on the grill. So
we'll
see what happens.
But
I love coming home. You know, it's a short trip, but, you know, this place is always home. It'll always be home.
Yeah. Are you enjoying Boston, though? I think Boston kind of reminds me of Chicago a little bit when I've been there.
Yeah, they're similar. Bit. Yeah. I mean, there's an attitude there, which is good. I mean, you know, Chicagoans certainly have an attitude, but. You know, I don't know that I would last in LA. I don't really like New York. Kind of stinks, you know. You've been in New York.
I was just there 2 days
ago. Garbage all over the street.
I was there 2 days ago. Boston's stepping good. Around garbage on the street.
Oh, yeah. Stinks, smells. Yeah. But Boston, no, there's a you know, you don't get to Boston without Chicago, and I really mean that. Like there's an attitude there, but it's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the fall, Andy does a show with Dan Hampton and OB and is not on this show. He abandons us.
I do not abandon you. I do the first 2 hours.
He said I want to go work with them instead
abandon
of you.
Abandon is a strong word.
Very strong.
He leaves us. Leaves
he
us
never
high
said
and dry.
That.
Leaves us high and dry.
He never said that.
I play with my other friends.
He plays with his other friends, yeah. He plays with his other friends. So, you know, anytime you want to come back and do sports, we'd love to have you here with
I'll
us.
I'll tell you what. I've said this for years. The only thing about that show is that it's the best when the Bears suck.
Oh, last year, Sam, was one of the best for that show.
And you watch them watch the game. And Hamp, you know, we had an oak table at the old joint in the conference room. And I thought Hamp was going to break this oak table with his fist. And that was, you know, the John Fox era. Yeah, last year, what, Andy, 3-14?
3-14. It was a lot of fun, especially when OB threw his walker one time because something happened.
Now, there's a picture.
Yeah.
But, Chwani, what did OB say?
I can't repeat it.
Come on, no, come on, do your OB. Chwani does a killer OB impersonation.
Come on, Chwani.
Come on.
This is beyond belief. I can't take it anymore. All of these people, they've got to go from the top down.
When they were watching a bad Bears game, I'm telling you, and I told management at the time, I said, you need to broadcast this.
Yes.
This is the show.
That's the show.
Watch these animals. Watch this game. And like I said, when they were bad, those two were unhinged.
Yeah, that's the greatest. Really nice to have you stop by.
Are you kicking me out already?
We got a show to do.
Oh.
And I have a newsroom to run.
He's got a newsroom to run.
Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba.
We've got monkey stories to do here, Sam. We're not just sitting around here twiddling our thumbs.
Oh, thank you for all you did for me, for real. This show was my favorite thing to do on the weekends. And, you know, between the two old men and the young kid, it was, I think we had a nice little rhythm.
Wait, two old men?
What? Who do you think you are?
I says what I says.
Schwani thinks he's one of the kids on Saved by the Bell all of a sudden.
No, it was the two guys. It was about? The two guys, the Muppets in the theater, and me.
All right, look at that.
Dance, sports guy,
look,
dance.
Look at that show. Sam Panionovich, you can catch him. Can people watch you online or something?
Yeah, like they that? Can. They can go to NESN, which is the New England Sports Network. They can go to NESN.com, and we do a show every day at 5:30.
All right, very good. See you over at the Cheers Bar. Sam Panionovich. When I die, probably one of the greatest songs ever recorded. The legendary Buddy Holly. That'll be the day when I die. We slip into our weekend theater segment. What's going on stage in Chicago and out at the Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire. The Buddy Holly story is just open and tells the story of how Buddy Holly set the music world on fire. That flame tragically put out in a plane crash several years later, but not without so many hits. Just like this one, and playing the role of Buddy Holly in this production is Karen McCabe, who joins us on the phone this morning. Karen, welcome to WGN. Nice to have you with us.
Hey, Dean. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So when you hear a Buddy Holly song like this, do you kind of, you know, slip into character a little bit?
I admit I was singing along just now when we were listening to That'll Be the Day. It's hard to resist, you know, his voice, his guitar. It's just great music.
Yeah, what is it, you know, about the Buddy Holly? Is it the mystique? Is it about that he died so tragically and so young? Is there, I mean, he's truly one of the fathers of rock and roll, really. I mean, he was coming up right about the time that young Elvis was coming up at the same time. What do you think is the Buddy Holly mystique?
I think he and the Crickets opened for Elvis in 1955 a couple times, and he was definitely taken with Elvis. And I think he was always driven to experiment, you know, with his voice and wanting to do things his own way, you know, wanting to write their songs and arrange them and play them in the studio. You know, he got frustrated on those early recordings at Decca because they wouldn't let him play lead guitar, and he's like, come on, let me play it my way, let me show you I can do it.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, when you watch old film footage of Buddy Holly and the Crickets, you know, these guys were obviously pre-Beatles, but, you know, in that same era as Elvis, these guys come out with suits and ties. It was like a completely different world of rock and roll that was beginning. I mean, I don't think these guys realized what they were in this tsunami wave of music that they were about to produce for the world.
Yeah, I think it was unexpected for them, you know, coming from small town Lubbock, Texas. I think, you know, Buddy's brothers and even Buddy himself, maybe at times he thought, you know, I don't know if this is really going to go anywhere. And then flash forward a year, and he finds himself on the Ed Sullivan Show and is playing his songs for a national television audience. It's just wild.
Yeah, it was crazy. How are things going for you out there? I bet people at the Marriott in Lincolnshire are just completely loving the show. And also, I mean, I've talked so many times about how the in the round setting at the Marriott really kind of amplifies the experience, because you can, you know, almost literally reach out and touch the performers.
That's right, actually. Yeah, audiences are loving it, and they are singing along with us. And there's actually one section, if you sit you can sit pretty much right next to the drums. If that's your kind of thing, if you want to be near the drummer, you can sit pretty much right next to him. And so it's fun. You know, we're surrounded on all sides by people who are digging on the music. And we just we've got a great cast of actor musicians, and we're just having a ball playing together.
Now, talk to me a little bit about the show itself, the Buddy Holly story. you know, just in a few paragraphs or whatever, you know, tell us what people will experience when they come to see the show.
Yeah, well, it's sort of a 90-minute jam-packed, super quick telling of Buddy Holly's life. You know, it spans probably 2 years in time from when he was playing the Sunday Country Party in Lubbock, Texas, really before before the Rocket took off. And then you follow him. He meets up with Norman Petty in Clovis, New Mexico, and they record "That'll Be the Day" and all these other hits. And you follow them to New York, where they play the Apollo Theater and break down some racial barriers there and break new ground in that way. And then you sort of follow him. He meets his wife, Maria Elena, and you witness that sort of flash in the pan romance. They met each other, and 5 hours later they were engaged, which is totally true and wild.
Wow.
Yeah, and then you pretty much jump right to the final tour of his career, the Winter Dance Party Tour, which I'm such a nerd for all this stuff, because it's really fascinating. And they toured all around the Midwest, and it was Buddy and Richie Valens and the Big Bopper, and Dion and the Belmonts were on that tour as well. And so you get a little bit of the Surf Ballroom concert in Clear Lake, Iowa, which was their last show, unfortunately.
Yeah, before Richie Valens and the Big Bopper and Buddy Holly got on that plane. That was,
right.
That changed, the music scene. Or as the song American Pie puts it, the day the music died. You know,
that's right.
It specifically refers to that in the song. How do you approach playing Buddy Holly? Do you go back and look at old tapes, his performances, his speech patterns? What's the process like, Kieran, for you to become Buddy Holly?
Oh, sure. Well, I spend a good amount of time digging into what little video footage there is of Buddy, and try to get a sense of how he moves, because he's kind of a quirky guy. And it's funny to juxtapose his sort of very energetic and upbeat songs with his very slow Southern Texan drawl. You know, he sort of had in his interviews and recordings, he takes his time with how he speaks, and isn't in a rush to get anywhere. And I think there's something really charming about that. And everything I've read and listened to in interviews, he was just a gentleman through and through. But he was a stubborn critter, according to his bandmates and friends. And,
a stubborn critter, you say?
that's what his friend is, Jerry Allison. That's what the drummer said of him.
Yeah,
stubborn critter.
I guess also, but because there's so little video footage or film footage, that for you as an actor, it allows you to make this role your own a little bit and take some creative liberties with it. That has to be great as an actor, that you're not going out there and just doing an impersonation. You're able to bring some Kieran McCabe to this.
That's right. And I think most of all, what makes the show a success, or what I hope makes my portrayal of Buddy a success, is bringing a sense of play to the music and the performance that I think Buddy would have loved and would have brought himself, in the way that he was always experimenting and playing with his vocal and his arrangements. And I try to bring that same kind of sense of play and just have fun with my bandmates on stage. And that's what they were doing on the Winter Dance Party Tour, and so that's what we try to do on stage every night.
Yeah, you must love this kind of characterization to play, because I remember correctly that you were also in Million Dollar Quartet, which was the same vibe, right? The same era, the whole same thing, correct?
That's right. Yeah, I was on the drums for that one. I was playing the drummer, and I actually had the pleasure of doing the role of Jerry Allison in Buddy in 2018 at American Blues Theater. It's interesting to get to play, do the same show, different roles. And it's really neat.
Maybe makes you more well-rounded, or, like preparing you to take on this role by doing these other portrayals. It, just kind of makes you a more well-rounded performer for this kind of show, for the Buddy Holly show anyway, right?
Hey, it's an interesting ask of a performer It's not just a play, and it's not a musical, really, because all of the songs, we're playing them live. And so, you know, you kind of have to be unapologetic about being a good musician on stage. And sometimes strings break or guitars go out of tune, and you have to trust that the audience will be with you and will wait a moment while you tune a guitar.
Yeah, right.
Or while you switch out a guitar string. It happens, and people feel like they are part of you know, something that's real and live that's happening when you invite them into that stuff instead of, you know, being shy about it.
I think people kind of like that a little bit, right? That people like when things go wrong a little bit. There's an honesty to it that people feel like, oh, I was there when the guitar string broke. It was,
of course.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. The show is going on until August the 13th, right?
That's right.
So people can come out, and if you go to marriotttheater.com, you can get ticket information, or 847-634-0200. We've got a bunch of people on our text line saying that they went to see the show already and just absolutely loved it. So rave reviews from some of our listeners. Who else is in the show with you? Who else is making up the band? The Crickets, I guess, right?
Yeah, you've got Jed Fader on drums. You've got Mike Karowski, who's played he's played Jerry Lee Lewis quite around a couple places as the fourth Cricket. And you have my bandmate Sean Whitley as Joe on the bass. And Sean is actually a member of our a band that formed out of the other production of Buddy that we met and fell in love over Buddy's music and made our own band called the Oh Boys. And so it's a joy to get to play
fun
music with him on stage.
Wow. So you're a real aficionado of this. I mean, you're not just taking on a role. This is music and a period of music in music history that you really love then.
Yeah. You know, it really resonates with me. And I, Buddy's old bandmate, Sonny Curtis, wrote a song that had the lyric, Buddy Holly lives every time they play rock and roll. Mm. And I love that and think it's true. And it's that spirit of play and experimentation and just sort of sharing the joy of rock and roll with each other. And that's honestly my favorite thing to do. And so whether it's on stage at the Marriott or around town in Chicago with my buddies, it's just great to be playing music.
Good for you. I love that how much you love it, you know, and the passion is there. Two shows today, one at 1 and then another at 5 o'clock today. But the show is, as I said, running through August the 13th out at the Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire, and you can get more information through their box office, 847-634-0200, or go to Marriott Theater, and that's theater spelled with an R-E instead of E-R, marriotttheater.com for more information. We've got some sound from one of your shows, Karen, and I wanted people to hear you as Buddy Holly. So we'll listen to a couple of quick Buddy Holly classics featuring Karen McCabe as Buddy Holly. Karen, thanks for coming on today. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Oh, boy. Thanks, Dean. It was a pleasure to be on.
And don't forget sunscreen. Don't forget to put sunscreen on before you go outside today.
Yeah, apparently.
That's my helpful tip.
You didn't do that with you were saying that.
I was at the Burger Fest, the Roscoe Village Burger Fest. I was one of the judges. It was cloudy. It was drizzly when I went out there.
In the morning it was, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I got there around 1 o'clock. That's when we did the official judging. Because you don't want to rush your way through eating 10 hamburgers. I gladly pay you Thursday
for a hamburger today.
Wimpy. What was Wimpy from? Was that from a cartoon?
That was from Popeye.
Wimpy was?
Yeah, it was on Popeye. Wimpy. And then there was a chain of drive-ins called Wimpy's.
Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah. Wimpy was on Popeye.
I couldn't remember what
cartoon. And he was always trying to borrow money, you know, from
for
Popeye and Olive. And that was his steady diet.
Yeah.
I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Yeah, and I'm the oldest one on the show. Right. Yeah, so anyway, it was, you know, overcast and drizzly in the morning when I got there. And, you know, it suddenly became beautiful. You know, there wasn't a cloud in the sky. It was nice and sunny. And I didn't get sunburned, but I wish I had had a little sunscreen on my bald head. So lather it up, folks. That's my helpful to stay hydrated.
Well, Dr. Most would definitely agree with that.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes. I'm a big big fan of lathering
it on.
Slather it on.
Yeah, I actually used a trowel. Those things that people use to put, that masons use to build buildings. That's
just
what I use for my sunscreen, right.
We need to go back in the Greek town again.
You want to bring that up, really?
No pictures allowed.
I've talked about these blackmail pictures that I have for Schwani. That if anything ever happens to me, before you call the coroner...
You know what? Either one of us, for that matter.
Before you call the police, before you call anybody, go to my house and get these pictures. Because it wouldn't be good for either one of us if anyone ever saw these pictures that I have, these blackmail pictures that I have on Schwani. And I will say, it was a Greek town.
It definitely was.
Yeah, it was a Greek town, and many Ouzos may have been involved. In the making,
a few
in that story.
I think there was a couple of bottles of Roditis that was being.
Yes, back in our utes.
Mm-hmm. Back in it our, was back in our utes.
Our misspent utes. But anyway, I played the Greek music today, the music of my people today, if you will, because today I'm going to be out at a Greek festival at the Saint Spyridon Greek Orthodox Church in Palos Heights. You know, they have, during the summertime, they have these great, all the Greek churches have these great Greek festivals. And last couple of years, I've gone to the St. Spyridon Greek Festival, which is 123rd and South Ridgeland Avenue in Palos Heights. And they have fantastic music. All of the yayas in the church, the grandmothers, have been cooking and preparing and getting ready. So you have this fantastic homemade food. And there's dancing and games for the kids and, you know, pastries and all kinds of stuff. And it was yesterday. I'm sure they had a great time with the nice weather. And it is today from noon until 10 o'clock. St. Spyridon's Greek Festival, 123rd and South Ridgeland Avenue.
No rain in the forecast. It may cloud up a little bit, but we don't have any rain in the forecast today. And high in the 80s, that'll be nice out there.
Yeah, it's going to be nice. I'll have my sunscreen on.
Yeah, definitely do that.
Slathered on.
I'll slather it on along with some olive oil.
You need
oil.
To wear a hat.
I'm going to wear olive oil and oregano.
And your galoshes.
Oregano and tzatziki sauce. I'm going to be a walking Guido sandwich.
Oh, nice.
To protect myself against the sun.
Sure and have some baklava.
I probably will. I'm telling you what, the ladies of this church and, you know, the grandmas, you know, they've been making these pastries preparing for this. So when you go to the, you know, here's what I'll probably have. I love their pork shish kebab.
Yes.
I love that.
Yes.
With like a nice olive oil and lemon marinade on it. And, you know, it's served with a little salad and rice. They have the spinach pies, the spanakopita. That's delicious. I'll probably have some of that. Wasn't I just saying a few minutes ago I couldn't eat anything because I did this burger fest?
You were talking about how you were feeling a little ill, in fact, burgers.
I still feel bloated from the burgers yesterday. But I don't think that's...
By the time you get to the festival this afternoon,
I'm going to have that because I'm talking about this like I can't wait to eat again when really I feel like I could never eat again after all this.
I just run a few laps. You're good.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have, you know, all that. And then they've got all these pastries, these homemade pastries that the yayas have been making. But these Greek festivals at the churches, they also, it's one practically one of the only places you can get this dessert that's called lokomathis, which is a fried dough, which is always delicious anyway, but they soak it in like a honey and sprinkle nuts on it, walnuts, and they're warm. It's like a warm donut, basically, with that's sweet and, you know, with honey, and it's delicious.
No sugar put on it, just the honey.
No sugar, just the
with the dough and some nuts.
Yeah, right. So when you see me on the TV tomorrow morning, I will definitely be wearing elastic pants.
You're looking like Wimpy.
wearing to go buy me a pair of elastic pants.
I have to get to my A-list interviews. I'm so full.
I need to sit down.
Oh, I couldn't move after that burger thing yesterday. I knew I wasn't going to eat a full burger, but I had like maybe two or three bites of each burger so I could judge it properly. I was so full at the end of it. It's like somebody carry me out of here.
You had this weird look on your face. Oh. Are you okay over there?
Is it bad that I took my pants off right on the... Some of the kids were shocked, but I couldn't...
I did hear about some police activity around there.
Some relief. I had to let that top button go. I'll try to restrain myself and act a little more presentable at a church later today.
Yes, please.
I'll try to be a little more proper, but I can't guarantee. The festival today is from noon to 10 p.m., 123rd and South Ridgeland Avenue in Palos Heights. Beautiful, beautiful place. And, it should be some fun. You know what? The Batavia, you know where Batavia is, right?
Out west,
west suburbs. They are about to open the largest movie screen in the entire state of Illinois.
Oh, that's where it's going to be.
In Batavia.
Okay.
It's right before the new Mission Impossible movie opens, so you can go out there and see Tom Cruise, jump out of a plane or whatever he does in the movie. I haven't seen it yet. On this gigantic screen, but we'll learn more about that coming up in a bit. And today is Tom Hanks' birthday, by the way.
Oh.
67 years old today, and we'll have a little tribute to Tom Hanks coming up in a few minutes. It's 11:20. This is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. Thank you all very much for tuning in today. Thank you all so much for so many nice comments, people having fun listening to our Sunday morning show. We really appreciate it and glad that you are enjoying it out there. Coming up in a few minutes, a birthday tribute to our longtime pal Tom Hanks, celebrating his 67th birthday today. That's coming up in a few minutes, but I wanted to talk about something else related to the movies, and that is the opening of what now will be the largest CinemaScope screen in Illinois, a movie screen, get this, that is 96 feet wide. That will be the Imagine Batavia Super EMX Auditorium, which will have its first public showing this coming Tuesday. And Paul Glantz is the president and CEO, the co-founder and chairman for Imagine Entertainment. Paul, thank you so much for joining us. Good morning.
Good morning, Dean. I'm honored to be with you.
It's my pleasure to have you here with near introduction of this fantastic movie screen. Explain what this is, because there are some movies I can't think of any place else I would rather see them than on a 96-foot screen.
Well, I guess our adage today is go big or go home, and so we're going big, Dean. And not only is it going to be big, but it's going to be paired with 64 channels of Dolby Atmos immersive sound. And the screen will be lit with 55,000 lumens of laser light.
Wow, that's amazing. So would this compare to an IMAX screen? I mean, I'm just trying to imagine the enormity of what it is that you're going to be opening out in Batavia.
You know, IMAX typically has more of a square aspect ratio, height to width. This is a CinemaScope screen, which is more standard in the industry. And I do believe it's going to join its peers in Michigan as the largest screen in Illinois. and we're delighted to be bringing it to the market.
Yeah. So, you know, to compare, so this screen then is more like what we would have at home, more rectangular, more than a square-shaped screen, is what you're saying, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. So it seems like you'd be more surrounded by the visuals in this.
Well, all I can tell you, Dean, is I think you got to try it, because once you see it, I think you'll be wowed by it. As a kid, I remember going to a theater near my home that was 60 feet in width, and that was really overwhelming for a kid. But these days, we have to provide our guests with a compelling reason to leave their homes to be entertained. And so this is how we intend to do it, by giving them something that's truly special.
Yeah. Now, it's called the Super EMX Auditorium at Imagine Batavia. What does Super EMX mean?
Well, the super has to do with the size, because we have other EMAX auditoriums. And essentially what it represents is generically it's known as a premium large format, but in this case it's even bigger than a premium large format, which would typically 60 to 70 feet range. And so this takes it, kicks it up a notch, as Emerald might say.
Wow, I'll say. Man, I mean, if a normal screen is about 60 feet wide and this one's 96, imagine some of the things, you know, some movies you don't have to see on a big screen, but some movies you absolutely must see on a big screen. And I guess your first one is going to be this new Tom Cruise movie, the new Mission Impossible movie, right?
Yes, we're going to be kicking it off at 2 p.m. on Tuesday with the new Mission Impossible film. And we think it's a great film with which to inaugurate this this beautiful screen.
Yeah, that sounds pretty fun. Now, tell me a little more about the theater itself. I imagine you've got all the bells and whistles with comfortable seating and probably food and all those kinds of things as well, right?
Well, you're absolutely. You know, not only have seats become recliners and 7 feet of row spacing, but these days they're heated recliners. And so the concept is that, again, we have to compete with the in-home experience, and we feel like the way to do it is to offer you the greatest out-of-home experience possible. And you're right, we pair it with a more extensive food service menu. And then finally, in this building, Dean, you would find that we have this very special party room as well. We call it the High Roller Room, and it's got these really neat duckpin bowling lanes and billiard tables and so forth. It's a great place to come maybe before the move or to host a family party.
Yeah.
And so it's really designed to be an entertainment complex.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I mean, because as you say, you're competing with people who would just as soon stay home and watch a movie. I would argue that there's nothing like watching a movie on a big screen, for most movies on a big screen, but the communal experience of watching a movie, I think, is tangible as well. That is, if people aren't on their cell phones and talking and making noise, if they're properly watching a movie, there's nothing like that communal experience of everyone experiencing the thrills and chills and tears and cheers all at the same time.
Well, and you'll be among perhaps as many as 414 people in this auditorium. It's a spectacular room, and I think the marketplace will really embrace it. I think folks are going to love it. And as you say, it really is a differentiated experience from watching a film at home.
Yeah. Well, my original point with all of that before I got off on a tangent was that, it's been a difficult time since the pandemic, getting people into the theaters. Is that changing? And obviously, this is how you're responding to this, by offering, you know, this bigger-than-life experience to get people to come back into the theaters.
Well, there's no question, but the year-to-date box office through the end of June shows a very substantial recovery in theatrical performance. But I would tell you, Dean, that I think it's a tale of two cities. And in the one situation, where folks have either not had the means or the inclination to reinvest in their venues. I don't think they're seeing nearly the type of return to 2019 attendance levels that we are to imagine, where, again, we're focused intently on the guest experience and providing this truly exemplary out-of-home entertainment experience. I think you'll find that the, you know, those who are truly focused on providing their guests with that great out-of-home experience, they're doing fine these days. In fact, you know, we might have the best half in the first half of this year will likely be the best we've ever done in the history of the business.
Yeah, I know that, you know, when I go see movies, and I see quite a few movies, I'm not noticing empty auditoriums like I did 2-3 years ago. People are waiting in line to get in. I mean, and a lot of it has to do with the movies that are being offered right now. I mean, you know, everybody is saying that Tom Cruise saved Hollywood with his Top Gun Maverick. Likely his Mission Impossible movie is going to perform in a similar way. We've got Indiana Jones that's out right now. We've got new Disney movies that are out right now. There's a new Christopher Nolan movie called Oppenheimer that's going to be opening up. So, I mean, there's a lot of big new stuff that's coming out that I think people are going to come out for. Do you agree?
I do. In fact, if you look what we faced, for example, in last calendar year, we had a supply chain constraint, just like many industries faced. There were only 71 feature releases made available to theaters last year. This year, the total slate represents more than 110, wow, which is getting us very, very close to what we had in 2018 and 2019. So I would absolutely agree with you. We adore Tom Cruise in our industry, and we're grateful for what he's done for us. But the wide variety of films, the ability to show films that appeal to all different demographics, that's really integral to the success of our industry.
Very good. So the Imagine Batavia is at 550 North Randall Road in Batavia. And your opening day is this coming Tuesday, is that right?
Yeah, we've actually had the building open since June 1st, but it took us a little longer to finish up this giant auditorium. And so we're going to kick off the giant auditorium at 2 o'clock on this coming Tuesday.
Very good. People want to get more info. Is there a website, someplace where they can learn and see more?
Yeah, it's Imagine with an E, EMAGINE-entertainment.com. And there are still tickets available for that at 2 p.m.
Sounds great. I'm glad you could join us today to explain it all. Imagine co-founder, chairman Paul Glantz, the 96-foot wide screen, the EMX auditorium at Batavia. Thanks for joining us, Paul. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Dean. I appreciate it.
I've worn lots of shoes.
I could watch this movie any time that I see it on. I can jump in at any point and absolutely love 1994, Forrest Gump, a movie for which Tom Hanks won the Academy Award, playing Forrest Gump, rather. He won another for the film Philadelphia. He's just, I think, one of our great, great actors. And today, Tom Hanks celebrates his 67th birthday. It's given us so many different films, and we've been so lucky through the years to get to know Tom Hanks and interview him, I don't know, countless times on red carpets, sit-down one-on-one interviews over at WGN-TV. We had a memorable interview when we surprised him in the hallway, which we'll get to him talking about that, when we surprised him in the hallway having our staff members dress up as characters that he played in movies. He was surprised and went with the joke beautifully. We'll talk more about that in a second. Most recently, you saw him in the film A Man Called Otto, which I thought was fantastic. You saw him recently as Colonel Tom Parker in the movie called Elvis that came out a year or so ago. I thought he was great. He got mixed reviews for it, but I thought the choices that he made as an actor was fantastic. I'm a Tom Hanks fan. I mean, I'll admit it's pretty hard for me to be, you know, completely objective. because I like the guy. Everybody likes the guy. He's the nicest guy in show business. There's no doubt with that. Today, on his 67th birthday, I thought we'd go back and share some of the interviews that we've done over the years with the great Tom Hanks. And this was this interview took place at Graceland Mansion. We actually did the interviews at Graceland, where they shot much of the movie. And Tom Hanks talking about playing Colonel Tom.
I was just like obsessed a little bit with the choices that you made in portraying somebody for whom there is really very little video, very little for you to have studied to create Colonel Tom. So how did you do this?
There are two key pieces that I use over and over, but you're right. There's very, very little bona fide sit-down interview with him. One was an audio tape of a protracted interview he did like in 1956. Well, the guy just was asking the most standard question. How come Elvis isn't on TV? And what's he spending? Doing and spending his money, and do you think he's like sexy like Marilyn Monroe is sexy? Actually, questions about a guy that the interviewee, Colonel Tom Parker, knew was going to be one of the greatest artists of the 20th century. And so he's kind of like giving this kind of like primer to this guy of why Elvis isn't on TV anymore for free. You know, it even says he could go on TV if they want to pay what Elvis is worth.
Yeah.
And my boy is not worth $400 to be on
scale.
You know, he ain't worth that.
Yeah.
If they want to pay $10,000, they can have my boy. And then there's another one on the 10th anniversary of Elvis's death on Ted Koppel on Nightline, in which he just lays out, and if you read between the lines, you hear every beat of the diabolical genius that Colonel Tom Parker was.
The diabolical genius, but also sort of in and out of his accent, in and out of some of the mannerisms that you clearly picked up on and brought to life.
Well, he was from Holland.
Yeah.
As Baz Luhrmann said the very first time I met him, he wasn't a colonel, he wasn't a Tom, he wasn't even a Parker. His real name was Andreas van Kuik.
Yeah.
Something like that. So there was this... the moment of discovery, because I said, look, Baz, no one has bothered with the Colonel Tom Parker angle on this. The standard story of Elvis is, we've seen it, you know, the rise to riches, and that he's huge, and he makes movies that are dissatisfying, he comes back briefly, and then gains a lot of weight, shoots a TV, and dies in Las Vegas somewhere. And that, as Baz says, the very first lines of this film are going to be the Colonel saying, I didn't kill him. As soon as I heard that, I said, this is new turf. I'm in. What does the Colonel look like, by the way? And then I said, oh, I'm going to be in the makeup chair for a while.
Yeah, it was an amazing physical transformation that Tom Hanks went through becoming Colonel Tom Parker. And as I said in the interview, and I said in my review also, I thought that Hanks's performance was nuanced and interesting and introspective. I really liked it. I mean, I loved the movie. I thought Austin Butler as Elvis Presley was great, but I also thought that Tom Hanks was great. You know, some people are going into the movie, you know, thinking he's going to be Tom Hanks. Well, he's not Tom Hanks. He's Colonel Tom Parker, completely different person. As he was in the movie that came out last year called A Man Called Otto, which was a film about a senior citizen who was had a number of bad cards dealt to him in his life, and just didn't want people around him. He was really just kind of through with it all. And this movie was about some neighbors that melted away that hard shell of this man who has had such a tough life. And, you know, trying to get to the core of who this guy was. I thought it was another very interesting movie. Got mixed reviews because I think a lot of people want him to be Tom Hanks. They want him to be Forrest Gump. They want him to be There's No Crying in Baseball. You know, they want him to be one of those characters. But this was not a likable character that he played in this movie. But I found it very, very moving. And as I said to him in the interview, between an unlikable Colonel Tom Parker and an unlikable Otto, he is taking on some pretty challenging characters.
Such interesting choices for you this year with this and Elvis.
playing Colonel Tom, just like wildly complex characters that are so interesting to watch.
Well, the different perspectives, I think, two guys at the end of their trail, more or less, right? You know, and Colonel Tom Parker trying to set the record straight and talk about, as Baz Luhrmann said, you know, we can all understand that there would have been no Elvis without Colonel Tom Parker, but what would Colonel Tom Parker have been without Elvis? That's a pretty great challenge to throw down at the very beginning of the process. And with Otto, he doesn't care about his legacy for a moment. He's not even one to think. He only knows one thing and one thing only, and that is he's done. And I think these two movies, these two roles, are one guy who refused to do that, which was Colonel Tom Parker. He wanted to control it. He wanted to promote it himself. And Otto, who just said, I have no control over this. This is what living is about.
Yeah, two movies that I highly recommend, Elvis and A Man Called Otto, two of his more recent films. But, you know, go back to the Tom Hanks library filmography of some of the films that he made. Saving Private Ryan was stunning. A Road to Perdition, that was filmed mostly here in the Chicago area, was stunning. There's a fantastic story that when we were doing interviews with Tom and the whole cast, including Daniel Craig, who had just a very small role in that movie. He was just a little baby actor starting off. Playing Paul Newman's son in that movie. But when we interviewed the whole cast, it was here in Chicago. And Tom Hanks was running late for the interviews. And there were, you know, several journalists waiting for him. We're, you know, just patiently waiting and waiting. And it was quite a while. Tom finally shows up for the interviews, but he's got a bag of Mr. Beef Italian beef sandwiches that he bought for the journalists, and he said, "Guys, I'm so sorry I'm late," and he's throwing Italian beef sandwiches at us. He goes, "Here, have a sandwich while I get set, and we'll start the interviews in a minute." So we all sat there eating Italian beef sandwiches, courtesy of Tom Hanks, and then we had the premiere on the red carpet in front of the Chicago Theater, and then they had the cast party at Gene and Giorgetti's, the famous steakhouse. So we WGN TV, I had a crew with me. We went and camped out in front of Gene and Giorgetti's, and a limo pulls up, out steps Tom Hanks, and I'm standing outside with the crew. We're getting ready to go on live on the 9 o'clock news on Channel 9. Tom Hanks steps out of the limo and he goes, "Dean, what are you doing?" I said, "I'm getting ready to go on live TV. You want to join me?" He goes, "Okay, sure." And he comes over, and you know, nobody knew it was going to happen. I'm shouting back to the director at the station, "Come to me right now. Tom Hanks is standing right next to me right now." And we did the live interview with Tom Hanks. He's just a generous guy. Your average A-lister is not going to do something like that, but he is just one of the greatest guys in the world. One of his visits to WGN-TV, we surprised him by having our staff members dress up as his most famous characters from his movie. So as he was walking into the building, we had a camera ready and surprised Tom with playing his character from Castaway, his character from A League of Their Own, his character from Forrest Gump, but the TV show Bosom Buddies. It was that This Is Your Life, and he was just laughing and playing along with the whole thing. Let's hear what Tom was thinking about all of this when we come right back.
Bone Jimmy.
Oh, you
there, it's a classic scene from the movie from 1992, A League of Their Own. Tom Hanks celebrating his 67th birthday today, so we thought we would go back for some of our A-list interviews with Tom through the years. Maybe one of the most classic moments on our WGN TV morning news was when Tom came on the show And we surprised him in the hallway with our staff members dressed up as characters that he played in his movies. He was laughing and kind of dumbfounded by the whole thing, played along with it so great. And later I asked him about it, and he definitely remembered his visit to WGN.
You remember when you came to WGN, we walked you down the hall, we had all of your old characters. We have asked our viewers over and over and over favorite moments on our show. Hands down, landslide, the Tom Hanks walk down our hallway remains the number one moment on WGN Morning News.
I didn't realize what was going on until I saw, I think, the third person that looked like dressed in something that was familiar. You had everybody there. You had Woody, and you had Captain Miller. I'm sure you had them all. Kudos to you for not telling your guest what you were going to be doing to them. I thought that was, it took me by surprise.
Yeah, we didn't know how that was going to work out. That could have gone, if it was anyone but you, it could have been really disastrous. So Now we're gonna have to add this Western guy. Man, Tom, what a role this is. I mean, there has to be something special for an actor just to take on, you know, an old-fashioned Western, this pure salt of the earth kind of character, right?
The great joy is you have a character that's already made for you. Because he's just so burdened. There's no amount of flashbacks, and there's no beginning to the story. You just start off with this guy who is burdened by so much in his past. Yeah, look, it's kind of nice playing somebody who's my age. You know, I'm 64, so you're not trying to. You don't have to fall in love with anybody. You don't have to kiss a girl. You have to instead just slowly figure out. Just the scars on his back tell an awful lot of the story for him. But also the clarity of his purpose in life, which is to read the news to anybody who has 10 cents and the time to hear it. There was something I think that was really magical about Paula Giles's book, is that she landed on this concept of a guy reading about Queen Elizabeth and the Cincinnati Reds and elevators in 8-story hotels in Boston, or how many people died of the fever, and whether or not a new train was going to be built, to people who are hungry for not just information, but for belonging to a world outside themselves. And that's what the news of the world, I think, is all about.
Yeah.
Is that the dichotomy between a solitary life and knowledge of the greater world that's out there.
Yeah, I don't know if I was more impressed by the pure beauty, visual beauty of this movie, or the parallels to things that are going on in the world today that were startling to me. I mean, it was really genius in so many ways.
There's a big distance between believing in hooey and magic and arguing about empirical science. There is something to look. I can't say enough about Darius Wolski and the beauty of essentially the oil lamp. We should all dim our lights every night at sunset in order to live in an orange glow, as opposed to some of the things we have.
Yeah, that's Tom Hanks from a couple of years ago talking about the movie News of the World. It's a straightaway Western. Really another interesting choice, fascinating, interesting character and choice that Tom Hanks has made in his motion pictures. Celebrating Tom Hanks' 67th birthday today. Tom Hanks' wife, Rita Wilson, on social media, posting a very sweet tribute to her husband. Today, saying, you know, love of my life, and he loves me just slightly more than he loves typewriters. Tom Hanks is a old-fashioned typewriter collector. He's got one of the interviews that we did during the pandemic on a Zoom was from his home office, and he had a wall of old typewriters, old manual typewriters, which he collected. So that's what she means when she says that he loves me just slightly more than he loves typewriters. Tom Hanks, you know, in an interesting, another WGN interesting note, Our former sports legend from WGN, Jack Rosenberg, who was a sports producer for WGN Radio and WGN Television, worked with Jack Burkhouse on the Cubs, worked with Ron Santo, really was the one that recommended Ron Santo be a baseball color broadcaster, legendary sports figure in Chicago, Jack Rosenberg, who was also a Manual typewriter fan. Jack wrote a typewritten letter to Tom Hanks, and amazingly, Tom Hanks actually got the letter and wrote Jack back with a typewritten note back, and the two corresponded for quite a while. Jack Rosenberg passed away recently, about a year or so ago, and I just thought that that was one of the sweetest things, and another example of what a nice guy Tom Hanks was to correspond with somebody who has had a shared interest in these manual typewriters, and you know, just it really meant the world to Jack Rosenberg, who had, you know, dealt with and worked with all the greats in the world of sports and presidents, and he was a producer of many things on WGN. But Tom Hanks just, you know, gave him quite a kick by corresponding with him with his typewriters. Coming up after 12 o'clock, we'll get into our Food Time show for today. We'll have a little recap of yesterday's Roscoe Village Burger Fest, which continues today, by the way, on Belmont. Between Damon and Levitt, basically Levitt, all these burger restaurants featuring their goods, and there's music and games and merchandise and all kinds of great things going on today. I'm going to talk with one of my co-judges of the event coming up about the festival itself, but what makes a great burger. We'll also talk about some summertime recipes on our Food Time show, all coming right up. I will add to the story that you just had about grilling safety, how important that is.
Very much so.
I'm so glad that you included that. But what I wanted to add to it was keep your grills clean, especially if you have gas grills. You know, all the junk drips into the grill.
And that can catch fire.
That can catch big time fire.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, you get a grease fire going down there.
That's not good.
And you have a propane tank that's, you know, going crazy in flames. Nothing good is going to happen. You got to keep that clean. Get the grease out of there.
I'm going to go home and clean my grill this afternoon.
My next door neighbor, years ago, I'm out on the grill. I'm on my grill making, you know, whatever. And he comes home from work. He's got like a suit on. And, hey, how you doing? Oh, you're on the grill. You're on the grill. Yeah, I'm going to get out here on the grill. He turns his gas grill on and goes inside to change clothes. And in the short time that he went inside, I noticed flames shooting out from underneath.
Oh, wow.
His gas grill. Like, shouldn't be coming out from there. So, you know, I'm like shouting, and nobody could hear me, you know, because everything was all buttoned up. Everyone had their air conditioning on, so the doors were closed. The air conditioner compressors were making noise. Everything couldn't hear me yelling his name. So I run around, knock on his door, and tell him something's up with your grill. There's flames coming out. But, and this is all maybe 2 minutes, 2 minutes, 3 minutes tops. In the time that it took me to run over there to tell him, you know, something's going on, the whole side of his house was on fire. The propane and the droppings, the grease droppings in the grill, and now the flames had gotten so big that they were crawling up the side of his house. And he had major damage, major fire damage. It was pretty scary. So clean those grills.
You know, you just made me think of something. When I was growing up, we had an accident in our neighborhood. A woman was horribly burned with grilling out As I recall, it was just misuse of the very flammable lighter fluid.
Oh, sure.
That you would use with a charcoal grill.
Right, yeah.
We're talking really second and third degree burns. Oh, it was a terrible situation.
Yeah, those things are dangerous. I haven't cooked in a kettle in a long time or used actual charcoal, although I have a grill and I want to start doing it more. But they have these little flame starter things now. Well, first of all, I mean, you can do the charcoal in those little chimneys. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is super easy and much safer than squirting the charcoal starter all over the place. Although it was fun when we were kids.
Well, watch certainly. Certainly.
Hey, watch this. Woo! Crazy kids. But they have these, little... I don't know, those chimneys, you don't even need that. Those are like the best ways really to start a charcoal fire. But they also have these little, they're like pellets almost, big pellets. And you put them in with the charcoal and you light them and these pellets ignite and sets the charcoal on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. These are our flame tips from today from Officer Dave and Officer Dean.
I do have one more story to report.
Sorry, your news time is over.
Oh, okay.
Oh, go ahead.
And this really goes right in with what you're going to be talking about here very shortly, with the Roscoe Village Burger Fest.
Yes, right.
And the
10
fact
hamburgers
that you
yesterday.
Had the very difficult task of judging.
I was judging.
Thanks to Ron Brown in the newsroom for giving us this report.
Oh, for the second consecutive year, the Stop-Along is this year's winner.
Wow.
You and two other judges.
That's me announcing the winner.
Yeah. Today's the last day, I believe. It already started here. It's after 12 now.
Right. It started at 11 this morning. Yeah. It's going on till 10 tonight on Belmont. Even though it's the Roscoe Village Burger Fest, and it's on Belmont between Damon to Levitt, I believe, is the West Street. But you can't miss it. There's music. There's food. Oh, there's food. I can't believe I was able to get,
I saw the
I can't
video.
Believe I was able to get on that stage.
Ron showed me the video of those burgers. I can understand why you were really, really, really full yesterday.
As I said, I only took one or two bites of each of the burgers, but one of the burgers had four patties on it.
You had both hands on that.
Four patties, cheese, lettuce, tomato, onions. I don't know what else was on there. I basically ate a half a cow yesterday. Orion Samuelson would be so proud of me today. Dean Richards, Sunday morning. Now he's getting into our food time show today. To talk a little bit about some of these fantastic street fests that have been going on. They're all over Chicago. I'd mentioned that I'm going to be at the St. Spyridon Greek Orthodox Church Greek Fest out in Palos Heights later today. Amazing food, lots of fun, games and activities for the kids, Greek dancing. The food, unbelievable. And I'm told that the St. Sophia Greek Orthodox Church in Elgin is also having its outdoor Greek Fest today. So if you're up that way, you may want to check that out. We've got one in Elgin and one in Palos, both ends of the metropolitan area covered with Greek food and dancing for today. So, but also going on, as Shwani's mentioned a few minutes ago, and I've been talking, the Roscoe Village Burger Fest has been going on this weekend. It continues today until 10 o'clock tonight on Belmont between Damon and, I believe, Levitt is the westerly border of that. Tons of great bands. I listened to a fantastic Fleetwood Mac cover band last night. It sounded great. The bands that I heard were really good. The food was amazing. But I was honored to be invited to be one of the judges of their annual burger competition, where I sat at the judges' table with Alderman Scott Wagespach of the 32nd Ward, and also Samantha Esposito from Chicago Burger Bite, ChicagoBurgerBible.com. And we did a blind test of 10 of the burger vendors who were providing food for people at the festival. And we decided which ones we thought were our favorites of the whole thing. The Stop Along wound up being the number one choice. The Stop Along, 1812 North Milwaukee Avenue, and also 2210 North California, was the big winner. And Samantha Esposito joins me on the phone line right now from ChicagoBurgerBible.com. Have you recovered, Samantha? I'm not sure.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? Because I thought, well, this won't be so bad. You take a couple of bites. But it's a few bites from 10 burgers. And some of the burgers were like four patties thick.
Serious business.
It is serious business. Now, you were a judge last year also, right?
Yes, correct. Last year there were, I think, 6 burgers. This year there were 10. So, same as you, I was thinking I'd be able to go out for dinner after. I was thinking it was going to be no big deal. No, I'm definitely still recovering.
Yeah, I feel the same way. So, what was your day? I mean, we did a blind tasting, so we didn't know when we were judging the burgers who was who and what was what. We were just purely judging it on the burger itself, but which ones did you like best, to wind up liking best?
I think that the Stop Along was my clear winner, and so I was happy that the rest of you agreed. I love that burger. It's very smashy, super thin, definitely my favorite. I think Fatso's Last Stand had a fantastic burger with a little Merck's cheddar going. It's so Chicago.
Right.
Loved that one. Honestly, I don't know that there was a bad one in the bunch yesterday. It was a lot of strong showing.
Yeah, there was. I can't remember the name of the burger joint, or the restaurant, I guess it would be, but it was a tandoori-style burger.
Yes.
That was very, so interesting with in Indian spices and peppers, and it was a burger, but it had a very very Indian kind of flavoring to it, which was so interesting.
That's what I was really surprised and impressed with yesterday. There were so many different takes. They weren't just all your standard ketchup, mustard, mayo. There were really some interesting ones. That tandoori one was great. There was, I think our last burger was a lamb Greek-style burger with a little feta. That was completely different than anything you normally have. It was, oh my gosh, delicious.
Yeah, and there was one alleged burger that they sent over to us that that was like a gigantic meatball on a bun.
Yes.
It wasn't flattened out at all. It was a meatball with lettuce and onions.
It looked like a bowling ball.
It looked like I mentioned to somebody that I thought someone was playing 16-inch softball nearby, and the ball accidentally landed on the bun. That's what it looked like, and it was just like,
it really, really did.
How am I supposed to eat this?
Right. We had the alderman's son joining us, and he sat next to me, and this poor kid was going to take a bite of his dad's burger. He couldn't. His mouth was too small.
Right, right. But he did a very good job, though, I have to say. Alderman Wagesbeck's son, he was funny, and he was actually a very articulate critic, right?
Yeah, he was just full of sound bites. I'm like, somebody's got to get this kid on TV or something. He just, oh my gosh, he had very, very good critiques. It was a joy to have him with us.
It was a lot of fun. We had a lovely time. It was so nice to meet you. And
yeah, it was great to meet you. It was so much fun.
Yeah, talk with the alderman, and we met so many nice people. And it was just, I didn't wind up leaving until 10 o'clock last night.
I believe it. The music was great. There was so much to look at. They had a great turnout. The weather ended up beautiful. I was thinking I might go back today.
Yeah. Well, I hooked up with some friends who were there, and I couldn't eat anything else, for the rest of the maybe ever for the rest of my life. I'm not sure, but they hadn't eaten yet. So they were, trying the different burgers. One of them lived nearby, so we could, you know, get out of the crowd for a little bit.
Go up to the condo,
get a little second wind, come back down and enjoy some music. So it was a fun day. Now you keep an eye on burgers. Your website, ChicagoBurgerBible.com, ranks burgers all over the city. So how do you do this? What's the criteria that you use for what makes a great burger?
So I try to look at the whole experience as opposed to just the burger itself, which is a little different than what we did yesterday. But I want to look at, you know, the hospitality and how is the ambiance more than just the burger. But I think that the burger is important. It's about the meat to bun to topping ratio. That's a huge part of it. It's, you know, the way it's cooked. Is it cooked to temp? Is it different? Is it something, you know, that you don't see everywhere? Is it kind of your standard? I feel like these days in Chicago, the style is generally a smash burger, or maybe a little either Dijonnaise or garlic aioli. That's kind of the usual, what you see everywhere. I love that style. So are you doing it well, or are you doing something totally different? It's been so much fun.
Yeah, I found it very interesting, the trends. Clearly from the 10 burgers that we sampled, there wasn't a slice of bacon in the whole bunch.
And I know.
There was a time when you could not get a burger without bacon on it, but that trend is clearly passed. And the smash burger is like all the trend in burgers right now, made on a grill where you take a ball of ground beef and smash it down to where it's so thin, so when it cooks, it cooks very quickly and it gets crispy and charred.
It's that Maillard reaction. It's very different than it used to be. Those thick patties, bacon, you know, the really robust bun. That's not what's happening anymore.
Right, and if people want more than just a thin, crispy burger, which is really good. One of the restaurants served us like sliders like that, and I thought, well, that's really nice. It's just if you don't want to eat a full burger and get full, just a little slider of it is good. But most everybody had at least two or three layers of patties, right?
Oh yeah, that was kind of a recurring theme yesterday. And I like that. I definitely want the resounding, kind of the major flavor to be the beef, and I really felt like that was kind of a theme yesterday. Is they definitely let the ground beef be the star of the show, and I think that's how it should be.
Yeah. So what are some of your favorites now with your evaluating them on your website outside of the ones that we judged yesterday? What do you think are Chicago's best burgers?
Oh my gosh, I could go on and on about this for hours, Dean, but I will tell you, I think my favorite in the whole city is probably Red Hot Ranch, which is, kind of a late night spot. I always, whenever somebody's coming in from out of town, I always say that's like the total Chicago experience. It's a great burger. It might be the cheapest eat in Chicago, bite for bite. It's super, super thin, and it's the double patty usually, and it's got all the standard toppings, but it's delicious. It's no frills. It's, you're eating outside under the L tracks, and it's perfect exactly the way it is.
Now tell me the name. Tell me the name again.
It's called Red Hot Ranch. They have two locations. There's one, they just moved. It's kind of Bucktownish, but now it's more Logan Square. And then they have another one up on Ashland on the north side. It is fantastic.
Okay. Red Hot Ranch. Okay.
Yep.
What are some of your
others? That's a great one. You can't go wrong. And then I love a sit-down burger. I think who's doing it best in the sit-down burger game these days is probably Gretel, also in Logan Square. I live on the south side, so a lot of times I'm not really in these neighborhoods, but I will travel for a great burger, and they have a fantastic one. It's that smash style. It's pickles, onions. I think they do a little Dijonnaise. or maybe it's a special sauce, but it is so delicious, and they have the best sides, I think, of just about anywhere in Chicago. When it comes to comfort food, they've got great french fries. They have great mashed potatoes. The macaroni and cheese is to die for. It's just, I always tell people, go hungry, because that's the thing. You'll need to be rolled out in a wheelbarrow, practically.
Yeah, you can read much more by going to ChicagoBurgerBible.com. And I love on your website, it says, welcome to the no salad section. It says, I'm just a girl standing in front of a salad asking it to be a burger.
that's my life motto right there.
I love it. There's, if you're a burger fan, it's a great site to follow and to check out. And I look forward to seeing you again at one of these competitions.
Absolutely.
Samantha, and we'll love to have you on the show again, talking burgers or, you know, whatever it is that you're
Definitely.
Following.
Yep, that sounds great. It was so great having, just a total eat fest with you yesterday, team.
It was. I hope the alderman's okay today. We'll see if he falls asleep at a city council meeting. We'll know what happened. We're all in food comas today. Samantha Esposito, ChicagoBurgerBible.com. Have a great day, Samantha. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye. Good luck with your recovery.
I had no idea that there were so many Greek festivals going on today. I was talking about the one that I plan on attending later today at the St. Spiridon Greek Orthodox Church in Palos Heights. And somebody called and said that the St. Sophia Church in Elgin was having one today. And also, I just got a note that the St. Demetrius Church in Libertyville is having their Greek festival today.
Well, I'm not surprised. Here it is, July. It's summer. Yeah. They want to get out and share all of that good food.
I can go on my flaming cheese tour today.
After your burger fest yesterday. Wow.
Why is Dean's eyebrow singed? I was talking earlier that about the past few days. I was in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan visiting an old friend, and small town life, it's so quaint and lovely. I don't think I could live it. I know a lot of people love it. I'm good for like 2 or 3 days, and then I got to see a rat or.
That's nice. That's a good image.
I need some smog. I need someone to yell at
traffic
me.
Traffic congestion.
I need some finger gestures while I'm crossing the street.
Somebody yelling at you.
Well, I'm a city kid. But it's lovely, and it's very charming, and I enjoyed myself. I went to the Gladstone, Michigan 4th of July fireworks, and they had a big, a festival in their park that's right on the lake, and it was really very, 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 very nice. But here, the other thing that I noticed, they have a lot of museums, like small-town museums.
Oh, sure. Little local historical societies.
Yeah.
And talking about various things that the community may be known
famous for. Right.
Or a connection to a larger era of history.
Yeah. There was Escanaba, Michigan, is the next town over from Gladstone, where I was. And they have a history of iron museum there.
Yep.
Because the iron industry was,
Iron and copper.
Iron and copper, right?
Iron and copper.
Exactly. They had an outdoors museum dedicated to the history of, outdoor life up there. Very, very interesting. I didn't go to the museums, but I drove by them.
Oh, that's very nice.
I was busy looking for a rat. I didn't have time. He's a city guy.
Yeah.
What's the most unusual museum? You love stuff like this. You used to travel all the time with your dad. Did you ever go to unusual museums?
Well, unusual from the standpoint that you may not think of museums as we think of the Field Museum here or the Science and Industry, but one that was maybe a bit out of the ordinary. Is also in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, all the way up at Whitefish Bay, called the Shipwreck Museum.
You mean Whitefish Bay?
Whitefish Bay.
Whitefish Bay.
Get
some pasties
and
go
of course,
up to the Whitefish Bay.
And, of course, there is a big focus on the Edmund Fitzgerald,
sure.
Which went down in a horrible, horrible storm in the 1970s, and relatively speaking, not terribly far from where the museum is right now. But
someone should write a song about that.
You know, that's a good idea. Yeah. You know, there's a story behind it.
Because the legend lives on.
From the Chippewa on down.
To the great lake they call Gitche-Gumee.
Follow the bouncing ball here, folks.
Oh, no, they're singing.
Go to WGNRadio.com.
Oh, no, people are reaching for their radio dials.
Yes.
Oh, no, they're singing again.
But seriously, that, you know, you would think, oh, museums can be enjoyable, and this one is, but there's also a very solemn factor to it, because everything that's there talks about shipwreck going back to the
1800s. Yeah. I was reading an article, I think it was in the Tribune, about a lock museum. You know, if you think
lock and dam museum.
You think about the history of, you know, locks and you know, entry locks, you know, like that kind of things, and just, you know, locks to keep things secure. I was reading the article. It's fascinating. I would go to a lock museum to see these locks that go back 200-300 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating. Mm-hmm. And the what was the one that Spike used to talk about all the time? The Mustard Museum. Then the history of mustard.
Mustard.
It's in Wisconsin. Was it Mount Horeb?
Mount Horeb, Wisconsin.
I'm trying to remember how, you know, this was so long ago with Spike, but it's a place that's got like 5,000 different mustards on display.
Wow.
Including, at that time, Spike was, you know, selling his Bite Your Butt mustard, which was really good mustard.
It was good mustard. I had some of that myself.
Sweet and spicy. I don't think they make that anymore. That's what Spike's mustard went there, and they had like 5,000 different ones. And they used to take the coffee, and when Spike would have guests on their show, celebrities on his show, Spike would send the coffee cups of whoever the guest was to the museum. And they have like Sophia Loren's paper cup and Gene Hackman's paper cup, like that sort of thing. I love museums like that.
A couple other interesting aspects about specifically the Midwest is that a number of older lighthouses have become museums. There's a lighthouse museum of sorts at the north end of Old Mission Peninsula, just north of Traverse City, Michigan, that was a lighthouse going back well over 100 years. But you can go in. It's actually called the Light Station, where you had families that lived in these, and you know the lighthouse keeper was on duty there, but families lived there, and it's kind of an interesting thing to think about, you know, kind of a remote location there too. You're up virtually day and night back in the 19th century before electricity. But
somebody texted in that the Mustard Museum is now in Middleton, Wisconsin.
Middleton, okay,
right next to Madison.
Mm-hmm.
It's another place we should do the show, Schwani.
I agree. And bring in the burgers that, you know, from the places.
Oh, I'm thinking if we get the Mustard Museum, we need to do hot dogs.
Hot dog, yeah, okay.
Hot dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So. Someone on our text line, if anyone's been to an interesting museum, I'd love to hear about it. I love hearing about these quaint little museums or just interesting little finds. Like this, 312-981-7200. I'd love to hear about this. Somebody texted in and said that there is a bridge museum on Wacker Drive. Is that? I've never even heard of that.
A bridge museum?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that would stand to reason. A great location for it, right on the river walk.
Right on the bridge. Would be a good spot. But where is there a bridge museum?
I'm not sure exactly where it would be, but I did a story. I just looked this up. Talk about unusual museums. It's no longer in existence, but it was called the Museum of Funeral Customs, and it was located near Oak Ridge Cemetery, where Abraham Lincoln is buried in Springfield, Illinois. I did a story on this a long time ago. But it was the Museum of Funeral Customs, you know, early ways in which, you know, bodies were prepared for embalming. And it opened in...
Hey, come on. Come on, Mom. Come on, Dad. Let's go on vacation. Where are we going on vacation this summer? To the funeral museum.
But it was there for a while near Oak Ridge Cemetery, recreating various customs, not just embalming, but, you know, the funeral carriages and other things that were there.
I would imagine that's changed quite a bit.
Wasn't
there something on Lakeshore Drive that was like a surgical, the history
might
of
have been,
surgery?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like surgical instruments that were used 200 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure where that, maybe on the south side somewhere there.
No, this was right around, I want to say like around Walton Street. It was like in the...
Oh, near Northwestern.
In the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
It was in the Gold Coast section. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Somebody texted in that there is a leather museum. There's a leather museum dedicated to the history of bondage.
Is that the one on the... There's something along those lines on North State, isn't there?
I don't know. I already know more than I want to know. That's really all I need to know. Just to know that it exists is comforting enough to me.
Won't go any further.
Somebody texted in that there is a button museum in Chicago.
A button museum?
The Busy Beaver Button Museum. I wonder if that's in connection with the Leather Museum at all. It could be a very... Have a few laughs, keep you updated on what's going on in the world and around Chicago on a Sunday morning. Fairly quiet morning today. We've got our A-list interviews, all of our regular features, theater and music and all kinds of things going on, and our Food Time show. We're going to talk about a special salad that you can make that sounds so delicious. I haven't actually tried making it yet, but I heard about it, and I was like, ooh, I can't wait to get on the show to share this with everybody. So we'll get to that in a couple of minutes. I just wanted to wind up some chat on these little small-town museums that I ran into when I was out of town, and lots of you are calling in and telling me about museums. This surgical museum that I was talking about, somebody texted and said it's called the Museum of Surgical Science. And it is on Lakeshore Drive in the Gold Coast. So, you know, if you're interested in that, it's just south of North Avenue, I guess, on Lakeshore Drive. And they have the history of surgery, you know, the tools that they used and instruments, you know, and so forth. I guess it sounds kind of interesting. Somebody said that there is a National Quilt Museum in Paducah, Kentucky. Beautiful quilts that are really fine art. I've seen some beautiful quilts. I know that's quilting is a super big deal. So that's sounds kind of interesting. Somebody said that in New York City there is a sex museum. Of course there is in New York City. Why wouldn't there be? The Bridge Museum, somebody said that there is one. I'd never heard of it. Born and raised here. I've been all over downtown. I'd never even heard of it. But somebody said that there is a bridge museum, the Southwest Tower of the Michigan Avenue Bridge. Yeah. Learn something new all the time. Let me see. A lot of repeat stuff here, but thank you. Somebody said a lighthouse museum in Michigan City, Indiana. I've never been there, but I have seen it when I've been up that way. So yeah, some interesting museums and collections. If you're looking for something to do in the summertime, somebody just texted that there is a Spam Museum. You know, the meat, the canned meat, Spam. There is a Spam Museum in Minnesota. So, yeah, that'd be a fun activity for the kids for a nice summertime vacation. Guess where we're going on vacation? To the Spam Museum in beautiful, I forget the town. Is it Austin, Minnesota? Can't remember. Probably doesn't matter. Look it up if you're interested. All right. I wanted to get to this recipe that I saw. And it sounds delicious for summertime. I love a tomato salad. I can't wait until the tomatoes in my yard ripen up, and I can just go in the backyard and pick a couple of tomatoes. I've got some cucumbers growing back there and some green peppers, and I just make a nice, you know, little salad with a vinaigrette, and I put some nice feta cheese in there, like a Greek style salad, village salad, they're called. But I love fresh tomatoes, love them. Caprese salad, I could eat it every day. I've got basil all over my yard that I'm growing. But I've found this recipe. Listen to this. A Bloody Mary tomato salad. Bloody Mary tomato salad. And it's made with ingredients that are either the same as a Bloody Mary or simulate the tastes of a Bloody Mary. And, you know, this is what. Here's what's in it. Celery. Small red onion, some lemon juice, coarse tomatoes, a couple of pounds of nice ripe tomatoes, and you can already find them at the store. I don't think anyone's tomatoes are quite ready to be picked off the stalks yet, but most stores or farmers markets have some delicious tomatoes right now. But you know, think about the things that you put in your Bloody Mary. Celery, this recipe has red onions or shallot, has a little lemon juice, a little sugar, tiny bit of sugar, black pepper, and some parsley, okay? So that's the salad itself. Now, for the dressing, what they do is they mix soy and balsamic vinegar, tablespoon of each, to simulate the taste of Worcestershire sauce. Soy, a tablespoon of soy sauce, and a tablespoon of balsamic vinegar. Into that, they add a tiny bit of Tabasco, goes with the, you know, your Bloody Mary mix, a grated piece of garlic, some celery salt, and some extra virgin olive oil. Okay? So you mix all the dressing mixtures. You put the celery and the red onion in the bowl. You put the lemon juice, the sugar, the salt, and you let that sit for a little while. And then you make your dressing, the soy sauce, the balsamic, the Tabasco, garlic, celery, salt, and olive oil. Mix that up separately. And then you drain the celery and the red onions because you put that, the salt in there. So extra fluid is going to come out. So, you know, get all that out there. Then put the tomatoes in at the end. Mix it all together. And I can't wait to try it. It sounds like such a different take on, a tomato salad on a hot day, a nice, refreshing tomato salad like that that tastes like a Bloody Mary. You kidding me? That sounds absolutely delicious. I love a Caprese salad. I think this coming Wednesday, on my TV cooking segment, I'm going to do some of the, I think I'm going to do this Bloody Mary salad because it sounds so unusual and sounds completely delicious. But I think I'm going to do some other tomato recipes as well. And in the few minutes that we have left here, let me just quickly open up the phone lines. What do you like to do with a tomato? A salad or something else? What do you do with tomato recipes that I might try on TV? 312-981-7200. Next. All right, 12:55. Let's get a couple of quick tomato recipe ideas. Joy, how about you? You're on WGN.
Hey, Dean. I make this for my family every summer and for parties, and people love it. It's you take your cherry tomatoes and half them, salt them. You add avocado. And then I like to use the blackened frozen corn, but you can use any kind of corn you like.
Mm-hmm.
You mix that up with lime juice, like a quarter teaspoon of cumin and cilantro, and you're set.
Wow. Wait, now give me that one more time. Cherry tomatoes, grilled corn,
avocado.
I
like to use the frozen blackened corn, but you could use any corn you would like.
Okay, yeah.
About a quarter teaspoon of cumin,
right?
Salt, lime juice, usually one or two limes, yeah. And then cilantro.
No oil.
Nope, you don't need it.
Wow, that sounds delicious. I'll bet the avocado makes it a little creamy too, right?
Oh, yeah, it's really good.
I may steal your recipe, Joy. I'm telling you right now.
Please do.
Oh, that sounds delicious and so refreshing with the lime too. Thank you.
It's perfect for the summer.
Yeah, have a great Sunday. Thank you. I love that. Phyllis, you're on WGN. What do you have?
Hello. Good morning, Dean. Your show is always so fun to listen to. Thank you so much for being on Sunday morning.
Thank you.
I have a fried green tomato. Mm. I think all of us do it, but I kind of experimented for a while to really get it kind of crisp. So share a little bit less slices, and then you put them in milk for a while. Then you drain them from the milk and put it in flour.
Right.
Take it out of the put it in the beaten egg. You beat an egg up so right. It's kind of nice and neat.
Right.
Dip it back in the egg, and then panko breadcrumbs, and then you put it in the fry pan.
Oh, my gosh. For how long? Do you just brown it on both sides?
Just till it browns on both sides, exactly. And then you can add, I like sometimes adding a little cayenne pepper, depending on how you want to spice it up, you can. But
right.
You don't have to. They're delicious just the way they are with some salt and pepper.
Yeah, I was going to say just a little salt and pepper would be fine, but, you know, some cayenne or maybe a little parmesan on there, would that be good?
I don't... Yeah, you could, they're really one something you can doctor up, doctor down. You can do whatever, any kind of flavor you like. You want to put fresh basil from your garden.
Oh.
Sometimes I put some chives. I take some of my chives and put them in the egg. So then they're in the egg. Then you put it in the egg wash. So so you can do all kinds of stuff with it. Put them in a nice hot heat with a little bit of oil. I don't use a lot of oil, just a little bit. I just fry them on both sides, flip them.
Just to brown. I bet you could do it in an air fryer too. I'll bet, right?
No, you probably could. Absolutely.
Yeah. Why not? Everybody's air frying everything these days. Phyllis, that sounds so delicious. Thank you so much. And Donna, real quick, I have less than a minute here. What do you have?
Gazpacho. In fact, I'm ladling some out. I know. Do you have a recipe for that already?
I love it. I love gazpacho. Yeah, I made it.
You make
it? I made it with like the usual green pepper, onion, cucumbers, but I put some watermelon in it also recently, and it didn't make it overly sweet, but it gave it just a little sweetness to it. And it was really good. What do you put in yours?
Well, this one has tomatoes in it, too.
Oh, tomatoes, of course. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And some tomato paste and garlic and, you know, just whatever vegetable you have in your house, you just put it in the blender.
Yeah.
And voila, you have cold vegetable soup.
Try to make it the day before. It tastes better the second day. And
I made this 2 days ago.
Donna, that's going to be so delicious. And then you keep it in the fridge so it's nice and cold.
Absolutely.
There is nothing more delicious on a hot day than gazpacho. I love that.
Isn't that great? Yes.
Donna, thank you so much.